The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for The Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to be talking to our good friend, attorney Irwin Aronson. But before we get into any of the guests and what's going on tonight, I got to say, last Saturday was a huge, massive, enormous success. One of those moments where you sent a very, very strong message. If you remember, I talked about 650,000 people across this country joined credit unions, moved their money from the banks, the too big to fail banks, over to credit unions, just in that short period of time from when Punish the Bank Day began. Well, on the day, last Saturday, the numbers are in. The credit union, National Association, CUNA, they are reporting that on Saturday, 40,000 people moved their money from the too big to fail banks into credit unions. Now, that's not saying how many people moved them into small local community banks, your neighborhood bank, none of that. These nearly 700,000 people moved their money out of the too big to fail banks and these big banks and into credit unions alone. That's pretty remarkable. So congratulations to those folks, and just a great way to start tonight off. In fact, just on Saturday alone, those 40,000 people moved some $80 million worth of savings into the credit unions. So, I've said this a number of times. I'm a huge fan of small local community banks. We're not feeding the investor class. You're not tied up in a whole bunch of international affairs. I mean, look what's going on around the world. Part of the problem with what's going on globally is that we are so interconnected. We've allowed ourselves to become so intertwined. And, I go back to, and I hope my Tea Party friends, they stop and think about it. George Washington was a big fan of staying free of foreign entanglements. And you look at our banking industry. I mean, most people take that as just military. Well, yeah, we don't want to get into war. We don't want to get involved in that. Foreign entanglements means all of that. We should have, from the 60s and 70s through the 80s and the 90s through the Clinton years, we should have been making this country as independent and as strong as we could possibly be, while still reaching out to the rest of the world. Look, you got to have ties. You've got to have relationships. But you never intertwine yourself in the way that we have been intertwined, because we're going to all go down. If things are going the way they're going in Europe, and a big part of it is, you look at Greece, for instance. Greece's big problem was they had a fairly high tax rate. They just had nobody to collect it. They stopped going after the rich people. They stopped going after where the money was. So tax evasion in Greece was, well, not even really a crime. It was kind of a slap on the wrist. I don't worry about it. Which is exactly where the Republicans want to lead us. I mean, if you remember during the Bush years, they laid off thousands of IRS agents whose job was to do what? Oh, yeah. Those experts that audit those big returns. The 1,600-page returns. I guess it shows you where the priorities were. So anyway, back from Columbus, an amazing experience in Ohio. It was great to go back to my home state for something very positive. And, you know, to see the mobilization, to see the people out in the streets, the people making phone calls, the organization that went into this, the mobilization, and the education that went along with it, I think is going to reap dividends for years to come. Question is, where does it go from here? Big, big, massive victory on issue number two. In fact, you had 2.1 million people voting to shoot down collective bargaining, the SB 5, to save collective bargaining in the state of Ohio. Now, understand, they've only got 655,000 union members. So you're looking at, you know, a little more than 2.1 million people saying, no, we actually believe that it's the best thing for our state. In fact, 61% of the voters. And the Republicans threw a ton of money into it. An absolute ton of money. Now, the Republicans threw an absolute ton of money into this issue number three, which was, you know, it was designed to get all the tea people out. And issue three was really kind of dumb in that you're going to go through all of this initiative, you're going to go through all of this battle, and it can do nothing. Because, after all, when you're talking about commerce, you're talking about the Supreme Court, if they pass this law, it's not going to mean a hill of beans if Obamacare is the law of the land. What it was meant to do, it was meant to energize the right-wing base and get the right-wingers out to vote on this stuff. And it did that. And they spent a ton of money. But you know why they picked up 2.1 million votes? There was no opposition campaign. Nobody talked about it because it was dumb. I mean, it was really, and this is what happens when you have unlimited funds. And the right wing has an unlimited amount of money to push these bizarre ideas and to push these things just to manipulate people. And that's what issue three was really about. It was to manipulate folks into going, oh, well, let's get all fired up, get out and do this. And on a day when across the country, the Republican ideals got quite a pounding. It was supposed to be that, and it is that thing where they say, look, everyone's against Obamacare. And it is what it is, man. The idea is so they would have something. Because you look down in Mississippi, that personhood thing where when the sperm and egg connect and now that's a person, has constitutional rights. Which would basically outlaw birth control, outlaw a lot of things. And I think if you really read the intent of the law and the whole idea, I think a lot of 13-year-old boys who are alone in their room would be going to jail. But Mississippi voted it down. Can you imagine the state of Mississippi talking, doing anything? If you threw anything out with the word anti-abortion attached to it. Can you imagine them voting that down? I mean, that's pretty remarkable to me that the Republicans have gone so far that even their base has turned their back on them. And you look at the guy in Arizona, this Russell Pierce, the guy who wrote SB 1070. You know, he's the right-wing hero, but you know what? He got thumped by his own party. You got a moderate Republican who took him out in Arizona. They're even going, I think we've about gone off the deep end. And up in Maine, again, Republicans in Maine, they rammed through this idea that we're going to steal voting rights away from people. Because up there, they've got some pretty decent voting laws, you know, same day registration. You do what you got to do. You know, the idea is that more people vote, more people participate. So you have these more lax rules, but you verify, and more people participate. But understand, Republicans don't want that. And if you look at Republican governors and states where they have governors and legislators of the same party, of the Republican Party, how many of those legislatures have gone after this nonsensical voter ID thing, this suppression scheme that they're going after? How many of them? A good number of them. You could tick them off, you know, Wisconsin, Florida, Tennessee, Pennsylvania. You know, you name it, they're doing it. And what they tried in Maine is, well, let's try and, yeah, let's cut off people's ability to sign up early or to have same-day registration. And they kept saying that, you know, hey, it's about voter fraud. We got to stop that fraud. Well, you know what? Their theft of people's right to vote went down 60-40. Now, think about this for a second. Less than 350,000 people voted in the state of Maine. One guy, a guy named Donald Sussman, you know, one of these billionaire hedge fund managers, you know, who's got money to burn. He probably does light his cigars with $100 bills. His wife is also a congresswoman from up there. They're up in their first congressional district. Well, he spent $800,000. Why? Take those rights away. And why would he care? Well, I'm sure, you know, a lot of it has to do with keeping his wife employed. I think a lot of it has to do with playing God, having this enormous resource to be able to manipulate and change people's minds and have things go your way. But here's the amazing part of all of this. The more that these Republican schemes get voted down, the more people like you and me get outraged, the more people we see in the streets, the more people you see at the Occupies, the more people we saw in Ohio phone banking and walking the streets, the more there's an opportunity. And I look at Ohio. Obama had a tough way. He was trending downward in the polls until recently. And you look at the latest public policy polling numbers, he's ahead of everybody. He's ahead of Romney, 50-41. He's ahead of Kane, 50-39. He's ahead of Rick Perry, way out, 53-36, way out in front of Gingrich, way out in front of Paul and Bachman, just way out in front of all of them. Why? Because the Republicans have overreached. And, you know, once again, when that happens, people wake up. And, you know, as when we were in Ohio, I was talking to a bunch of the people there, and they said, you know, before, you know, we didn't really pay attention. It was just some back and forth, and it was some bickering. But it wasn't until I realized they were going to take something from me, something that I valued, my right to have a voice on the job, my right to negotiate with my employer. They were going to steal that from me. And he said, that got me up off the couch. That got me involved in politics real quick. Now, you know, sadly, it's that kind of self-interest that has to draw people in. But the more we're seeing these attacks, the more we're seeing this two Americas, theirs and then the rest of ours, places where you have gated communities or private islands or private airports, and then everything else for the rest of us that's crumbling. Right before our very eyes, you know, driving, we drove down to Kentucky, and when we came back through, down and back, you look at the condition of our roads and bridges, you look at the fact that, you know, we went down, the one bridge was closed. We drove all the way down to Kentucky, the bridge is closed. We need to start investing for us again. We've done enough for them. We've created the largest billionaire class in the history of the world. We have done that. Now it's time to go back and recreate that strong, vibrant, growing middle class. And a class of people who once again have the voice to stand up and say no more, the voice to stand up and say we want our fair share, the voice to stand up and say do for us. That's where we need to be going. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, our good friend, Attorney Irwin Aronson. Stick around. We're right back after this.
drowning in crafty lies. Save the USA, I've resumed the ties and binds. Stop taking all our money and shipping it offshore. Do the job and join the
Saving Work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Ohio voters have spoken in a historic vote, affirmed collective bargaining rights for public employees in our state.
We are Ohio's Melissa Fazekas on the crushing defeat Ohio workers handed to the Republican attack on public worker collective bargaining rights. Voters overwhelmingly rejected the attack on collective bargaining in Tuesday's vote, repealing the law passed by Ohio's GOP.
Tonight is really about moderate, middle-class Ohioans sending a message to our leaders and our nation. They clearly and emphatically said to the politicians who passed Senate Bill 5 and supported Issue 2, we don't turn our backs on the people who watch ours, and they use their citizens' veto to reject Issue 2.
Fazekas hopes this huge win for workers will energize Wisconsin's recall of Governor Scott Walker for his very similar attack on collective bargaining.
We saw the pictures of you protesting outside of your state house and inside your state house. It was an encouraging sight, and I think that any time that workers in middle-class Ohioans or Wisconsin can stand together and take their democracy back, it's an incredible night here in Ohio. We hope our enthusiasm just spreads to other states where workers are being attacked.
Workers locked out of American sugar plants in North Dakota are being denied unemployment benefits. Jesse Russell reports.
Workers that have been forced off the job by American Crystal Sugar at two North Dakota plants won't be able to collect unemployment benefits. The three Republican members of the North Dakota Senate Delayed Bills Committee voted on Monday to deny the request, with one member expressing he was concerned that the committee would be perceived as choosing sides. The workers in North Dakota, who are not on strike, have been locked out and unpaid since August 1st. American Sugar has also locked out employees at plants in Minnesota, but that state has allowed those employees to collect unemployment.
Workers at a national beef packing plant in Dodge City, Kansas, have voted in favor of representation by the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union. That victory comes after 2 months of similar achievements for the union. In October, the UFCW organized workers at JBS facility in Michigan and a Farmland Foods facility in Iowa. And in September, they organized workers at Nebraska Prime. Those victories combined amount to an additional 4,600 workers being represented by the UFCW. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising, a one-hour radio documentary produced by Workers Independent News in conjunction with WORT. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast made possible in part by the United Mine Workers of America and by OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Standing tall against a multinational corporate agenda. The Rick Smith Show.
All the things you hold are real. You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
Well, that's what more than 2.1 million people did yesterday in Ohio as they shot down that steaming pile, issue number two. SB 5 went down in flames, and you gotta love Kasich. Well, I listen to the people. I'm gonna have to listen to the people. Almost a year to the day. He said, well, you're with me or you're against me. You get on the bus or I'm gonna run you over. There's no stopping me. Well, guess what? They stopped him. And good for them. Hopefully now what goes on there will save us from having to do the same kind of things and maybe stymie some of the aggression that the right has some of the things they've been going after. That's why I've asked our good friend, Attorney Irwin Aronson, to come talk to us about yesterday's result. Irwin, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, good to be here.
You know, in Columbus, it was an amazing evening as you saw people who, for the first time, they're becoming active and engaged in the process, and a huge win.
Well, I'm jealous that I didn't get to be in Columbus with you guys. I was here in Pennsylvania with my sleeves rolled up and my hands in the fight to try to bring justice back to Pennsylvania's courts and to most of Pennsylvania's 67 courthouses and row offices and towns and townships and school boards and cities and boroughs. And I missed the trip. But you watched history being made, and I'm so pleased that you guys were there and reporting to us from the scene, so we had that very special Pennsylvania bent on the Ohio activity by way of Rick Smith and the Rick Smith Show.
Yeah, you know, that's the whole reason we went, and, you know, I guess the next fight quite possibly is going to be Indiana, as they pursue right to work, quite possibly are going to pursue this right to work attack on workers' rights there.
Well, what we learned is real simple. When working people in the middle class get an opportunity to participate in their own democracy, they know how to be active participants in that democracy. And they saw wrong, and they righted it. And it's just that simple. And they saw arrogance, and they shot it down and kicked it back. And Governor Kasich, who talked about getting on his bus or being run over, just found that he has one heck of a flat tire.
Yeah, and the bus driver kept telling me that. Because, you know, I got to be honest, if you're a bus driver in that city, like the woman who we interviewed, she was quite offended by that.
Well, I was offended by it, and I'm not a bus driver. But there comes a day when we need to understand in Ohio and in America that people who operate buses and people who serve food in restaurants, people who teach our children and people who run into burning buildings while everybody else is running out are people that are putting their days and their time and their lives on the line for us. And our response is not to have a government kick them around and beat them down and step on them. That's not why government exists.
So let's bring this back here. I know one of the judge candidates, Dave Weck, I think his name was.
David Weck won, and won in a convincing way. And he's a wonderful guy and is going to be an extraordinary Superior Court judge. He already is an Allegheny Common Pleas Court judge. I've known him for many years. He and I were running mates when I was a candidate a decade ago for Commonwealth Court, and he ran the first time then for Superior Court. And we didn't do as well that year, but 10 years later, with his staying power and his commitment to service and a brilliantly run campaign, these judicial campaigns, unfortunately, are very deeply under the radar, even though they affect people so dearly. But David ran an extraordinary campaign and brought it home, and he's going to be an exemplary judge on the Superior Court, I can tell you already. And in a close race, our other really wonderful candidate, Kathy Buchvar, lost in a close election to a woman named Ann Covey, who is presently a member of the Pennsylvania Labor Relations Board, eked out a victory over Kathy Buchvar. But Kathy is young and bright and articulate and very committed to voting rights and people's rights, and I'm confident she'll be back.
That's good. I happen to notice Montgomery County, I think, the first time in how many years has it been since they've had two Democrats there?
Ever. The first time
ever. Wow.
The first time, not merely in my life, but the first time ever that the Montgomery County commissioners will be a majority of Democrats, but more importantly than Democrats or Republicans. Representative Josh Shapiro, who was the top vote getter out in Montgomery County and is now going to become a county commissioner in Montgomery County, he is a thinking, passionate, forceful, contemplative voice for working people and the middle class. And people forget very easily that Montgomery County, a former bastion of Republicanism and right-wingism in Pennsylvania, is a Democratic county now. The third largest Democratic county in Pennsylvania after Philadelphia and Allegheny counties. And Montgomery County just brought it home, and how wonderful and sweet it is.
So as you look at what's going on in Montgomery County, first time ever, you look at the vote in Ohio, where they pushed back, shot down SB 5. You look at what happened in Mississippi. You look at what happened in Arizona. Look what happened in Maine. All of these right wing attacks, all of these schemes that they've thrown out, they seem to be being batted back. And I'm hoping that there's some kind of an awakening, to what's going on.
Well, clearly we are waking up, and clearly the people understand with crystal clarity that this is a place and a time of moderation, that this is a place and a time for fairness, for justice, for equity, but most significantly, this is a place and a time where all agree with the cantations of the extreme right wing, that we got to get government off our backs. And so when in Ohio, the government swooped in and in a undercover of darkness act of stripping people of fundamental rights and doing so by saying essentially that they will make it illegal for those who would like to negotiate an agreement to be permitted to negotiate that agreement, the people will speak, and the people will repeal and reject and repudiate this frontal assault on democracy, and more significantly, this frontal assault based upon the idea of using the government to strip people of their rights.
Do you think any lessons will be learned here as they pursue some of the, maybe to a lesser degree, some of the same really ugly policies up in Maine, for instance, taking people's rights to the vote away, or in Ohio, people's rights to collective bargaining away. Will there be any lesson, do you think, here back home?
Well, I wish I could say that I have hope for there being a lesson, but the lesson I learned this morning, just 13 hours after the polls closed in Ohio, is that a cabal of Republican House members who are considering creating a new law in Pennsylvania that would allow public assets to become public-private partnerships, or P3s, where they would be building train stations and bus depots and maybe highways by having these public assets be operated in part by private players, or even owned by private players, although funded by public funds. There's legislation pending to do this in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, and I just learned today that at the beginning of next week they're going to strip out the basic protections to assure that a certain level of minimum wages would be paid to construction workers on those very public projects. This has been in the legislation since the beginning. The amendment that assures the payment of prevailing wages was sponsored not by a Democrat, but by a Republican, Representative Rick Geist of the Altoona area. And now we are hearing that Representative Geist and some of his colleagues are proposing to strip that simple protection of the public fisc, simple protection of, again, not using the government to beat us down, is about to be stripped out of that legislation. And you would think in the face of what we saw last night all over the United States that people would be taking some pause here instead of trying to march on us. But we're going to fight back.
Yeah, I mean, there's a part of me that thinks, they've seen what's going on, and they better hurry up and put the pedal to the metal. That being the other side of it. Either learn the lesson and fix your ways, or we better hurry up before they vote us out.
Well, you know what? If they hurry up and we vote them out, we'll have our time to repeal these things. We'll have our opportunity to fix these things. But I'd rather not have to fix them. I'd rather have some balance restored to government, because I find every day more and more that I'm saying words that I heard uttered not by liberal Democrats, but by conservative Republicans like Ronald Reagan. I want to get the government off my back. I want to get the government out of my collective bargaining table.
Yep.
I want to get the government out of my grievance procedure. I want to get the government out of my bedroom. And that's what we saw happening yesterday. People in Mississippi saying we want the government out of our bedroom. People in Ohio saying we want the government to get its nose out of our employment relationships. And here in Pennsylvania, we need a pushback, and we're going to push back. and we're going to fight these things. And when they want to use government processes to cut wages and to destroy our community standards, we need to speak up and we need to speak out. And I'm urging everybody who's listening to us tonight to get on the phone, get on the emails, and contact every member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives Transportation Committee and make them aware that this isn't Ohio and we don't take this stuff.
Yeah, I look at this, and I got to be honest, you know, the whole idea of building infrastructure, of building roads and bridges and doing all that is one to have a 21st century infrastructure, but also to stimulate the economy, put wages in people's pockets so that they can have some disposable income and get this thing moving again. I mean, if we have minimum wage construction workers, one, I don't know who you're going to get to do it, and two, what's it going to do for the economy?
Well, it's going to hurt the economy because we're going to drain this out, and I don't want to have Mississippi wages in Pennsylvania community. But more importantly, I don't want this race to the bottom on the highways, bridges, and roads that we travel on, that my children travel on, that your kids go to school in. That's not the way to do this. I don't want to have one group of rickety-rackety bridges replaced by another group of poorly constructed bridges with substandard materials and unskilled, untrained, unprepared labor can do any construction of them. We need to stop this. There's a reason to have minimum wages on these jobs, and it's not because I want to increase the cost, because I want to assure the quality.
There you go. Like you said, get on the phones, call your representatives. I've been against the whole idea of this P3 thing, and this is just another, to me, this was a backdoor way of doing this.
This is privatization, and it's privatization of the most public of our facilities. And if we as a people have not funded what we need to fund for our roads and our bridges to this point, causing them to be in disrepair, what makes us think that others who are motivated by profit-based greed are going to spend their own money to do what we citizens have not been able to do?
Yep, exactly. You know, I talked with Donna Cooper, who was in the Rendell administration, and she was talking about when they were considering privatizing the turnpike. And she said that, you know, the deal didn't happen pretty much because the Wall Street people wanted their profits guaranteed. They wanted a certain percentage that they said they could have gotten somewhere else. You know, your basic opportunity cost money, but they wanted that guaranteed.
Well, you know, it's an intriguing process. We have a couple of assets here that actually make money for people in Pennsylvania. One is the turnpike. Another is the wine and spirit shop system. And all I keep hearing about is why we want to get rid of them. Okay, I and you and everybody who's in Pennsylvania that's listening to this show tonight are shareholders in a couple of very successful businesses. The result of those successful businesses is that we have income from those. Income above and beyond the family-sustaining jobs with family-sustaining benefits that those institutions create and support. And every dollar of profit goes to diminish my taxes. It makes my tax bill smaller. It makes your tax bill smaller. The wine and spirit shops that they also want to privatize in not a P3 but a P1, private,
yep,
are contributing well in excess of $400 billion a year. That's $400 billion of fewer taxes that we all pay. And the response from the people who tell us how they don't want to tax us, how they want to get government off our backs, is to steal that asset from us and redistribute it. Redistribute it. You've heard about redistributing wealth. Redistribute our wealth to a bunch of private businesses who are committed not to putting money in the Pennsylvania Treasury, but to putting money in their pockets.
But isn't that how it's done? I mean, that's the goal here. And I hope people are waking up and paying attention to this. I go back to the thing Donna Cooper said. It just stuck with me. That we were going to have to guarantee their profits. So every time I hear someone say, oh, gee, you know, hey, we need to attract investment, I think of that. I think, yeah, we're going to attract investment. They're going to want a guaranteed profit.
Well, it's interesting to hear Donna Cooper's words on that, because I grew up in an era of regulated utilities, regulated electric companies, regulated gas companies, long before the gas and electric deregulation. And the Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission regulated those investor-owned, as they were known at that time, utilities. And the law required that the investors get a fair return on their investment. And the very same people who are saying that they want a guarantee on their investment when they steal the turnpike from us are the people who were advocating doing away with the regulation of public utilities in Pennsylvania, regulation of trucking that was a regulated industry, regulation of electricity, of gas, of telephones. They advocated doing away with those because there was a problem with the guaranteed return on investment for those investor-owned utilities, regulated utilities.
Yeah, it wasn't enough.
It wasn't enough, exactly right.
Because it's never going to be enough.
Well, greed is a very funny thing, Rick, and people who are greedy tend to get more greedy no matter how much their greed gets for them.
Yep. Irwin, always great talking with you. Look forward to having you back again next week.
Well, I'll be happy to be back next week. I'm glad you're home safe and sound, and I'm so very touched that you were out in Ohio reporting to all of us on what was happening in that absolutely breathtaking change of events and game-changing political outcome.
We had an absolute, a great, memorable time, and we're grateful for the folks out in Ohio for helping us out and participating. Again, Irwin, thanks so much. Look forward to talking to you again real soon.
You betcha. Take care.
All right. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
USA, we're number one. Oh, wait, Iceland is number one. But we did beat out Poland and Slovakia, right? No. But going down the rankings, and there we are, number 27, fifth from the bottom. So our new national chant is USA, at least we're not last. A foundation in Germany has analyzed the social justice records of all 31 members of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, ranking each nation in such categories as health care, income inequality, preschool education, and child poverty rate. The overall performance by the U.S., which boasts of being an egalitarian society, outranks only Greece, Chile, Mexico, and Turkey. Actually, even three of those countries performed better than ours in the education of preschoolers, and Greece did better than the U.S. on the prevention of poverty. Being at the bottom of the heap in social justice confirms the reality of both economic and political inequality that the Occupy Wall Street movement is protesting. It also helps explain why Occupy's grassroots uprising in America has spread so rapidly to more than 600 communities and has generated such broad public support. After all, our nation is fabulously rich, ranking well ahead of nearly all OECD members in national wealth, so there's no excuse for us sitting at the bottom of the list in education, health care, poverty, and other measures of a democratic and egalitarian society. This is Jim Hightower saying, bluntly put, we the people have let today's elites abandon America's founding principles of fairness, justice, and equal opportunity for all. These privileged few have purchased our government, stolen the wealth and economic future of working families, and reduced America to a plastic imitation of the country we thought we had. The Occupy Rebellion is overdue. Join it.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Yes, the most important issues of the day. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, how was the cat movie?
The cat?
The cat movie.
The cat movie was so stunning. I think it was one of the most important films of the decade. It was so great. It was so thrilling. Do you know what it is? It's a revenge spaghetti western.
Yeah, well, wow, that's a rave review.
It was just so much fun. It's just so well done.
All right. Well, as someone who's not a big fan of Cats, I'm still not going to see it.
No, I know you're not. But for anybody who is even a slight fan, and for anybody who has kids, it is just a delight. And witty, witty, witty.
All right. Well, rave reviews. I guess two thumbs up over there.
Two paws
up. There you go. All right, great. So what's going on around the world? Tonight, the Snow White, the Seven Dwarfs, back at it, doing their shenanigans, trying to out-hate Obama more than the next guy?
Absolutely. In Michigan, CNBC debate on the economy. And I have to say, they are getting tough questions from John Harwood and Maria Bartiromo, and also Jim Cramer, Mad Money. They are getting very tough questions from these guys, like they're giving their talking point answer, and then they're getting a follow-up question, which is complex, and which they're sort of like deer in the headlights. They don't seem to understand the question. First question, of course, was about Italy and what they would do to stop something like that happening here. They didn't seem to really have very much understanding of what was going on in Italy, so they just focused on what was going on here. But I got the impression that you don't seem to understand that Italy's the third biggest economy in Europe. Do you understand what that means? It was a little disconcerting. A couple of interesting highlights. They were asked about their tax plans. Michelle Bachmann's plan involves the fact that everybody must pay taxes, everybody, including, you know, even if you really can't hardly afford to pay taxes, even if it's two Happy Meals a year, she said.
Wow. What I love about her flat tax is it has multiple levels. She has a multiple-level flat tax.
Look, she's nothing if not creative. Herman Cain went back to the 999 plan, and he said the thing about the 999 plan is that it's fair to everybody. It's exactly the same for everybody. And yet last week he told us that it wasn't really the 999 plan. It was the 909 plan.
Yep.
It's good because for deprived people, you know, in the inner city, because that's the only place where he seems to think they are, they pay zero. But this week it was 999 again.
Well, you got to keep with the marketing. You see, he understands marketing very well. You keep repeating the same thing over and over and over again, and people catch on. It's a catchy little thing. 999. What could be easier?
Well, I think some things could be. Maria Bartiromo did ask him a question about when you're hiring a CEO. You do want that person, you know, shareholders have a considerable opinion about whether that person has a good reputation, for behavior, and that, you know, that was something that the American people would consider with him, with these accusations of inappropriate behavior, I think she phrased it, and the audience started to boo her.
I think it's a valid question, and Mr. Grope, we'll see where this goes. I mean, you gotta give this last woman credit. She came out. She claims she's not gonna file a lawsuit. She claims she doesn't want anything out of it. We shall see.
Yeah, it's been really very, very interesting, debate. A lot of fascinating things said, put forward, and some interesting ideas, that have come out, and, some talking points and
as much as, you know, here's the thing. And President Obama's got to be looking at this going, please, have one of these every week. Have one from now until the election, every single week until the primary, just to get people off of my back.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. I'm sure he is.
Because the more you listen to these empty heads, the more you listen to these people, the more you realize they do not understand the lives that you and I lead.
Except that, oh, and John Huntsman said, I want to be the president of the 99% and the 1%.
Ah, okay. Well, that's really not possible. So let's talk about Italy for a second, because, like you've said, the third largest economy, if that goes down, Europe's in big trouble. I'm sure they tried to spin that around to saying we need more austerity here at home and we need to cut to make sure that we don't end up like that.
Yeah, we're a day after Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi offered his resignation in the face of rising global market skepticism, and investors really revolted today. The markets were down in the U.S. over 3%, and investors don't really believe that even a new leadership can fix Italy's financial problems and revive its economy. So it's really a huge problem. The real problem is that Italy, which is the third largest economy in the Eurozone, is on a different scale than these other countries like Greece, Portugal, and Ireland. So any bailout would have to be proportionately far larger. And some analysts are sort of saying, look, you know, can the European Union or the International Monetary Fund, do they actually have enough resources to pay for it all? They're not even sure. And in a worst-case scenario, Italy might even be forced to abandon the euro. So that would, of course, have potentially even more devastating effects on the euro area. So they're hoping that Italy is not at that point. They think that because it is a strong and wealthy economy, basically, much stronger than Greece, that it could rebound. Also, if Italy elects a new government that's committed to fixing its debt and restarting growth, that the markets will like that. And there's a fair amount of goodwill so that things can turn around. But at the moment, I have to say, things are very, very wobbly.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is we're heading down this spiral down path. The more you have to talk about Greece, the more you have to talk about Italy, Spain, other places, the more you talk about pulling back, the more we're going to pull back, and the more you're going to see this spiraling down continue and this constriction continue.
Yes, indeed.
So how do we get out of it? Do we do it by taxing Christmas trees?
Well, it's a bit of a problem. There is a new Christmas tree tax that's been put in place by the Department of Agriculture, and it's a 15% per tree tax, which is a considerable amount of money.
Yep.
And it would have been paid by producers and importers of Christmas trees. And the White House is pushing back at the idea that it was proposing this Christmas tree tax, but of course it's being put on the White House. And basically, it's the National Tree Promotion Board that's requiring producers and importers of fresh-cut trees selling more than 500 trees per year to pay an assessment of 15 cents per tree. So, of course, it gets passed on to us. And it's like Got Milk campaign.
Right.
They decided to put the fee on themselves to fund, get this, a promotional campaign so that they can...
not pay the tax.
Well, they want to promote more people. They want to have an advertising campaign so that more people will buy live trees rather than artificial trees because the buying of live trees has gone down in recent years.
Right. Because they're a pain and they catch on fire sometimes.
Right. So people are buying fake trees. So Senator Jim DeMint, some people will say, surprisingly on the right side of the issue, is saying that this is actually the single stupidest tax of all time.
It's anti-God, I tell you. In fact, we're one nation under God, and how dare you tax his trees? It's Christ's holiday. How dare you?
We're one nation under Santa.
I can hear Bill O'Reilly now. This is anti-Christian. It's anti-Catholic.
This feeds into the Barack Hussein Obama anti-Christmas meme so beautifully, and it's only the beginning of November.
Oh, it's perfect. I can't thank you for bringing that to me. You know, I saw that earlier, and I'm going, this can't really be true. But here it is, absolutely true. So, great. I can't wait to hear my ditto head T-Twits bring this up in the future. Great. Because they're already talking about Solyndra, the end of all that solar stuff you talk about. It's all nonsense. More Solyndra news, I guess? More to feed the fire?
Well, you remember that there were subpoenas issued last week for Solyndra documents from the White House by the House Energy and Commerce Committee because they're investigating. And they said, we want your documents. Well, the deadline is noon tomorrow.
Uh-oh, high noon.
Yes. And it's expected that the White House will not comply.
See, I would I would give them everything. The kitchen sink, everything. You name it, they'd get it.
Except the president's BlackBerry, perhaps.
Yeah, well, again, the question is there anything in his life that should be private? Or that should
yes.
be, yeah, I mean, and that's the question. I mean, what, is his BlackBerry his? Is that?
Well, I mean, then there's the question of there is an executive branch, and there is a legislative branch, and there are pathways. And so they're saying, no, we have to be able to conduct some business for ourselves, and this, we're just not doing it. They also say, they say, the White House says that that not only is it a fishing exhibition, but that the subpoena was incredibly broad and that they needed to narrow it and that they were trying to work with them on this, and that what the committee did was that it basically stopped working with them on trying to narrow it and on trying to work together, and they just issued the subpoena. So it's basically what it sounds to me like what happened was that the communication just broke down.
Right. So tomorrow, high noon, we will... Suspense. Can't wait for tomorrow.
It's going to be very exciting.
Very exciting. And very exciting is watching the latest cliffhanger, which has become the super-duper, super-secret committee. Will the trigger happen? Will the Republicans figure out a way to weasel their way out of the trigger by saying, oh, geez, oh, it's too harmful?
Well, at the moment, the Republicans are basically putting out the story that the Democrats want the super committee to fail so that they can claim that it's quite complicated, but the Republicans are saying the Democrats want the super committee to fail so that the president can run against the do-nothing Congress in 2012.
If there's anybody out there who knows when someone's working against them, conspiring against, I think it would be the Republicans, because they've been conspiring to bring this guy down since, well, before he took office. I mean, the day of the election, the next day, they were working to figure out how to take him down.
Well, Mitch McConnell said he intended him to be a one-term president.
Yep, right from the very beginning. And I think the American people are seeing this. I mean, I saw a poll last week, half the country actually believes that, you know, the Republicans are, you know, they actually believe that the Republicans are doing nothing and dragging their feet and gridlocking and all of those things on purpose just to bring the guy down, thus causing us to suffer that much longer.
Wow.
Good people over there. You gotta love them. Victoria Jones, always great talking with you, and thank you for the great movie review, Politics and Movies.
Indeed.
You are wonderful. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we live. Rick Smith.
My name is Toya. I'm a sales rep, and I work for Capital Blue Cross.
If you're choosing Medicare coverage, Toya will meet you anywhere to help you decide.
I met him at food courts, diners, the parks, on a bench. And today, we're meeting at airport.
Mike was a Navy service person, an engineer, and a pilot.
I'm a senior blue PPO member.
He is technically retired.
I'm a gray-haired teenager.
Mike appreciates the visit.
It's more personal, and you can talk easier. You can show emotion, which you can over the telephone. And it's more caring.
Toya would agree.
I love my customers. I really, really do. My main objective is to show them that I care. When you care more, you do more.
For customer service, call 1-888-340-3978, Monday through Friday, 8 to 8, with extended hours October 15th through February 14th. Senior Blue PPO is issued by Capital Advantage Insurance Company, a Medicare Advantage organization with a Medicare contract. Capital Blue Cross and Capital Advantage Insurance Company are independent licensees of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Dear John Bank, I am so sorry it has to be this way, but there's just no choice. I wish circumstances were different, but I can't hide my feelings any longer. I'm in love with another, and you just don't compare. I got tired of you taking advantage of me, charging me higher and higher fees, and raising rates behind my back. I did love you so, but now we have to break up. It's hard, but the right thing for me. I'm with PSECU now. This credit union treats me right. That's all I ever asked for, to be somewhere I belong.
If you're ready to break up with your bank and take back what's yours, we're ready to help. Call, click, or come in. You can join. Go to PSECU.com/befree and see where you belong.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Absence works. Maybe it's the
Maybe it's the way it's being taught or the way that it's being applied out there. But the fact of the matter is, it is the best form of to teach our children.
You know George Bush is doing backflips. There's a guy. He's the only guy, really one of the only people on this planet who's doing the fist pumping right now. He's doing jumping jacks. He's doing backflips. Happiest guy on the planet because Rick Perry makes him look like Einstein and not the bagel. You have got to hear. You got to hear this. I mean, this is just absolutely.
And I will tell you, it's three agencies of government when I get there that are gone. Commerce, education, and the, what's the third one there? Let's see. Oh, five. Okay. So commerce, education, and the
EPA?
EPA. There you go. No, okay.
Let's talk everything.
Seriously? Is EPA the one you were talking about? Or?
No, sir. No, sir. We were talking about the agencies of government. EPA needs to be rebuilt.
But
there's no doubt about that.
But you can't name the third one?
The third agency of government, yeah. I would do away with the education, the
commerce,
and let's see. I can't. The third one, I can't. Sorry. Oops.
What about the EPA and the new rules coming?
Oops. Oops. You just, the campaign is done. And this is a guy who wants to get rid of the education department. A guy who clearly is missing his education. Missed it. It's his plan. I mean, I am just so, there's part of me that thinks maybe, I try to remove myself. Imagine if I was watching this anywhere in the world and going, that's the lead, that guy could be the leader of the most powerful world on the planet, an absolute dolt who can't even tell you the three things that he wants to get rid of. Gee, I know there's three meal times. There's breakfast. I like breakfast. It's got some eggs. Yeah, I like that. And dinner's always good. Dinner's good. Yeah. There's a third one. I know. I just don't know. And the third one that he was looking for was energy. And he comes from an energy producing state. I mean, I understand energy. If he just said the first one, energy. Absolutely. Gotta have energy. Because, you know, we want burn, rape, and pillage. You know, we want our energy companies to do whatever they want throughout the whole country. I get that one. Because after all, there are 17,186,589 reasons why this guy is a complete screw-up. It's the money that they've given him. Stop and think of this. The guy's raised over $17 million. And his plan is, well, we're going, I know I can do it. Man, please help us. I'm hoping tomorrow for the good of the country. He stands up and goes, you know what? I'm just not this guy. I'm just not going to go for president stuff. Just nuts. Absolutely amazing. And then the groper, Mr. Groper, Herman Cain, calls, Nancy Pelosi some, I forget what it was, a Princess Nancy or something derogatory. You might as well just call her Chicky. Hey, Chicky baby, come on over here, sit on my lap. Let's see what pops up. Wow. These people could be president. Scary stuff. Anyway, let's take a quick break. Right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Working class majority. Rick Smith.
Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. 60 protesters from Occupy Chicago, Stand Up Chicago, and several unions disrupted Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's speech on state budget reforms in Chicago Thursday. The protesters bought tickets to the speech and were seated at tables. They interrupted Walker as he began to speak.
Governor Walker is vilified! Governor Walker is vilified!
Yes.
And it's open today and not for today!
Leah Edmonds was one of the 60 who gave Governor Walker a dose of the people's mic.
It was people from Chicago's Teachers Union, from Service Employees International Union, to be there with a bunch of community and labor allies, all of us standing together. It felt very powerful to be able to speak to Governor Walker in that way.
After about 15 minutes, the protesters inside left with no arrests, chanting as they went. To help heal America's economy, National Nurses United has just a prescription, a meaningful financial transaction tax on Wall Street. The Registered Nurses Union was on the march Thursday in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, San Francisco, and at the G20 meeting in France. About 1,500 nurses, joined by the AFL-CIO, Occupy Wall Street activists, and other supporters, rallied outside the White House and marched to the Treasury Department in Washington. Liz Jacobs was one of the National Nurses United RNs taking part in the San Francisco action.
There's an unhealthy economy, and we know what the solution is, and we need to go to where the revenue is that will heal America, and that is Wall Street and a tax on Wall Street.
Red Cross workers in Connecticut are on strike today after they failed to reach an agreement with the blood supply organization. Jesse Russell reports.
The workers represented by Ask Me Council 4 are walking picket lines in Norwalk and Farmington, calling attention to 2 years of working without a contract. The primary issue holding up talks is the number of licensed nurses required at blood drives. The Red Cross has consistently lowered the number over the years, and the workers are concerned it raises safety issues. Other disagreements involve health care and scheduling. The Red Cross workers have additionally expressed frustration over the way the organization has treated them during the contract negotiations. The National Labor Relations Board has filed a number of lawsuits against the Red Cross for violations of unfair labor practices. Disaster workers are not on strike, minimizing the impact of the strike on relief from the storms that have hit New England in the past week. The Red Cross has been importing extra blood reserves from other states into Connecticut since the union made it known a walkout was on the horizon.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
It's time for change. It's time to rearrange. Let's change
keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now. I think it's time for change.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, over the years, since the Constitution was first signed and put into place, there have been probably more than 11,000 amendments proposed to the Constitution. Only 27 have passed, and rarely do I agree with some of the more idiotic ideas that come out about, hey, let's amend the Constitution for this or that. But this one put forth by Tom Udall, the Democrat from New Mexico, and Michael Bennett, the Democrat from Colorado, I actually agree with. I'm sorry, GE, I'm sorry, ExxonMobil, I'm sorry, Halliburton, you're not people. And we should not be looking at you as people, and you shouldn't have that much sway in our political process. And I do want to know where the money's coming from to fund the election cycles that are going on, which is why I thought it was interesting that our next guest, along with Representative Babette Josephs, held a hearing down in Philadelphia to talk about the Citizens United versus FEC decision. So he's here to talk a little bit about that hearing and a little bit more. State Representative Mike Sterler, appreciate you taking time for me.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
So tell me, what happened during this hearing today?
Well, we heard some testimony from some individuals that talked about the more than 200 years of history where corporations didn't have standing as citizens, in this nation, and the recent decision by the Supreme Court to reverse 200 years of 200 years plus of precedent and say yes, in fact, corporations are citizens and give them the rights of speech like citizens in the United States. And really, I think the worst part about it is give them the rights of citizens, but allow them to be anonymous, because by contributing to 527 PACs and other things like that, where there's no accountability and no reporting of who's actually making the contributions, they get speech as an anonymous entity with the same rights as a citizen who basically has to identify themselves when they speak.
Yeah, you know, you look at this, and one of the frustrating things is we don't know who's behind all of these PACs and all of these euphemistically named groups like Freedom Works and Americans for Prosperity and Americans for Dogs and Puppies and Mom and Apple Pie.
Right.
Funded by the Koch brothers and the Scapes and the rest of the billionaire class that we don't get to know about.
Right. Yeah, I mean, for the general public, they look at this and go, gosh, really? It sounds like an organization of people I would align myself with, not understanding who it is that the dollars are coming from and what the motivation is in some cases, or the ulterior motive is.
And, you know, you look at the tax codes, and this report had just came out yesterday that we've been focusing on. 30 multinational corporations, these big multi-state corporations, have paid zero tax in the last 3 years. 30 of the Fortune 500, nothing in the last 3 years. In fact, most of those 30 we gave money back to.
Right.
Just for the privilege of them being here. Why? Because they're able to use those profits and the money that we give them back to lobby folks like you people in Congress to pass laws that benefit them. I mean, the Marcellus Shale is a perfect example.
Yeah, I mean, there's a case where you look at every poll that's been done, the citizens, the real citizens, favor a tax on Marcellus Shale by more than 70%. And yet the kinds of things we see starting to move through the legislature are about as watered down as you could possibly get, and things that the industry itself has embraced. The one thing I do want to point out is that there are it doesn't actually have to be either you're for corporations or you're against corporations. There are socially responsible corporations that make a profit every day, as well they should.
As I want them to, correct.
And that have basically taken IBM, Colgate-Palmolive, have taken pledges not to contribute to political campaigns and actually have requested that the dollars that they give to things like the Chamber of Commerce and things like that not be used for political campaigns also.
But and I agree with you on that, and I'm not blaming corporations. I'm blaming our Supreme Court. I'm blaming our politicians for allowing them. They're only doing what they're allowed to do. So
right.
I don't blame them for moving jobs overseas. I don't blame them for using the tax code. I don't blame them for any of that stuff because we've allowed them to do that.
Right.
We've set the rules already.
Right. And that's why I think it's so important. I mean, people have a tendency to shoot at the wrong target, I think. Even with the Marcellus Shale issue, I don't think that the industry is inherently bad. It's the politicians that basically encourage that industry to be bad actors. They would be violating their fiduciary responsibility if they just said, you know what, we'll just send you a couple million dollars in taxes. Don't bother imposing one. We'll just send it to you anyway.
Yeah, they can't do that.
They would be in jail
for
being irresponsible, corporate CEOs. So it really is up to the politicians to say, you know what, we're not going to, hold you hostage here, but we're going to demand that there be a reasonable amount that gets put into the public coffers here to pay for some of the things that you're doing here in this state. And it's the politicians that haven't done that, not the corporations. Corporations actually show up at our hearings and say, you know, look, we've planned for this. We expect it. Go ahead. Do it as long as it's reasonable. We understand. We're with you. And then there's a few politicians that say, not going to happen. Nope, I promised I wouldn't do that.
I signed a pledge.
Right, right.
But, you know, the thing is you pointed out, you hit on an important thing. In the business plan, it's already there. We're already paying the tax. They're just not giving us the tax money to the state.
Right.
It's already in their business plan, and I've said a number of times, if you know Governor Corbett wants us to be like Texas, let's be like Texas.
Right, right.
They've got an extraction tax, if I'm not mistaken. In fact, they've got some kind of a mineral tax. Even if you're not drilling it, there's
right, right. There's property taxes. Unlike Pennsylvania, in Pennsylvania, the mineral rights aren't taxed like property values. So even though if I have the mineral rights to my land and the land, it may be worth $2 million. The property itself, without the mineral rights, is only worth $100,000. The local governments can only assess that property at $100,000. If I go to sell it, I'm going to sell it for $2 million, but the local governments can only assess it at $100,000. So that's all that the local government can collect in terms of property taxes. In Texas, they say, no, no, no. Those mineral rights count also.
Yep.
And last year alone in Texas, they collected more than $2 billion in property taxes just on the mineral values.
Yeah, I don't see any front groups doing any advertising on pushing that legislation.
Right, right. And you know the you aren't going to see any of that either. And that's the concern about this is that the people that I believe are actually looking out for the real citizens in this state are willing to say who they are. They're actually proud of it. I kind of view some of these 527s as cowardly chickens that they have to. One, put themselves out as some false name that they aren't, and then two, refuse to let anybody know where the money's coming from. If you think you're right, you should be proud of that.
Yep.
Say, you know, this is the coal companies saying this. This is the, you know, oil companies saying this. This is some, you know, right-wing billionaire saying this. If you're that scared of what you think, that you refuse to tell anybody who you are, that's a terrorist that hangs, lurks in the shadows somewhere.
Yeah, you know, I think of two groups right off the top of my head. There's this group, the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania, who I've asked directly who funds them. They refuse to tell me. And the Tea Party think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation, who I've asked where they get their money, and they say, well, I don't have to tell you.
Right.
I think it's important that we know who funds you. And I got to be honest, that seems to be fair to me. If labor unions have to disclose where their money comes from, I think we all should.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, if labor unions can say, hey, listen, this really doesn't come from our shareholders. We're just not going to tell you where it came from. We got it somewhere else. You would see people up in arms about that. When they say, well, we really don't need to tell you where our money came from. We're just the front for somebody. That's okay. Cause, you know, we're private sector. We can do that. And we're given citizen status now, apparently, by the Supreme Court.
And according to Mitt Romney. I mean, Mitt Romney just the other day.
Right. Yeah. Well, that, speaking of those presidential candidates, it's always, I thought one of the best posters at some of the Occupy Wall Street rallies has been the one that says, you know, citizens are, or if corporations are citizens, I'll believe it when somebody executes one
right.
In Texas, you know.
There you go. But here's the thing. Here's what bothers me. I just saw a report, I think it was Agency France Press who came out with it, that they're saying that this election cycle, 2012, is going to be in the $6 billion range. I mean, 2008 was bad enough. The presidential election was $1 billion. And they're talking $6 billion in this next election cycle. And I don't know any average Joes. There's no way I could raise the kind of money it takes to run for political office. And I'm sure, you know, it's not easy for you. You've been in the legislature a long time. It's gotten progressively more expensive.
Yeah, I mean, 20 years ago, a big time election was $250,000 at the state level. Now it's a million plus. That kind of exponential rise in what people are spending on these campaigns is really, I think, cause for everyone to sort of step back and go, is this really what this is about?
Because you're really precluding good people from getting into this. Because who wants to spend all day raising money? Who wants to go through that? Because, you know, people, I had a friend who's a congressman, and he said, look, you know, nobody ever bought my vote. When they gave a $20,000 contribution, they bought my ear for a couple of minutes because I had to listen to them to get the contribution.
Right.
And, you know, they didn't buy the vote, but they got access. And, and that's huge as well. I see, is there nothing we can do? And I look at Citizens United, and they've taken the rights of the states away to do anything. And this is where I call on my Republican friends, you know, the tenthers out there who are, we need states' rights again. This decision has stripped the state's ability to regulate anything on the federal level.
Yeah. Well, and that's really where I think it needs to start. I mean, even at the state level, with a state house race, you know, I can knock on enough doors to overcome somebody else's money, and I have, you know, in the over the years. But if you're a congressman or even a state senator or a U.S. senator in particular, you just can't knock on 12 million doors. You know, it just doesn't happen. And so it does require dollars to get your message out, which is why I think we should look at the reasonable, rational public financing of campaigns and also put limits on where those dollars can come from and how much can be contributed, because the numbers that we're talking about have started to become obscene.
Absolutely. And I'm a big fan of publicly financed elections. In fact, you know, we shouldn't be $6 billion. You know, most of that money is going to go to people like Comcast and the big media conglomerates because it's television.
Right.
Most of it's television advertising. So in part of that publicly financed election saying, look, you folks on the TV who own the TV waves, that's a public domain. You need to give some time to these candidates.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we're the ones that as citizens that actually own those rights. That we've allowed them to use.
So last question I've got, now that you've had this hearing, where are you going from here? What's the direction? What's the conversation? Where do you plan on going?
Well, I mean, there's a couple things. There's a movement afoot nationally to try and get the states to at least pass a resolution to say, look, you know, Congress, you really ought to consider doing an amendment. We'd have to ratify it, but, you know, you guys got to try it first, see whether you want to send it to us so that we can ratify it. Show that there's at least an interest at the state levels
right.
for them to do something. And so I think that's the sort of next step. It's going to be a slow process. There's no question about it. There's going to be a lot of ugly stuff happen until some of this can happen. And you know, I guess that maybe that's part of what's necessary in order to get people fired up enough about this. I still don't think people fully understand what happened in the Citizens United case, where, again, a group called Citizens United, which has nothing to do with citizens.
Or being united.
Yeah, right. You know, basically got corporations' personhood status. And we've seen sort of a steady erosion of that in the past few years. And now, in particular, with that decision, saw what I don't think people connect the two yet. That has to happen.
Once that
happens, then I think people will actually get outraged.
Yeah, wait till 2012 when the airwaves are full of nothing but attack ads from people that you don't know.
Yeah.
And then I think maybe there'll be some outrage. But you don't think a constitutional amendment could be passed in, well, 3 or 4 weeks, kind of like Mike Lee, the senator from Utah, thought we could pass a ballot's budget amendment in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think it's going to take a little more than that, particularly given the fact that the Republicans control Congress right now, and I'm not sure that the U.S. House of Representatives is going to be quick to limit the guys that are stuffing their campaign coffers.
Yeah, not much will there. Mike Sterler, I appreciate the time. Pennsylvania State Representative. Always great talking to you. Thanks so much.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Tell me with whom you walk, goes the old adage, and I'll tell you who you are. Maybe you're wondering just who the heck this Rick Perry guy is, this loud-talking, slow-thinking Texas buckaroo who says he should be your president. His PR storyline is that he's just a straight-talking conservative politico out of Paint Rock, Texas. But it's been ages since Perry walked with the good folks of Paint Rock. Now in his 27th year in political office, this guy has consistently walked with Mr. Money and been the loyal servant of the corporate powers. Let's take a peek at Perry's piggy bank. Not his personal money, though it is curious how he became a millionaire while doing nothing but government work. Rather, check out the Texas Enterprise Fund, a stash of some $400 million tax dollars that Governor Perry has essentially used as a political slush fund. TEF is supposed to be a cache of state cash for him to dole out as incentives for corporations to create jobs, but its job creation performance is somewhere between pathetic and a scam. The fund has, however, been a boon for Perry's re-election campaigns and for the coffers of his corporate benefactors. For example, 20 of the governor's top corporate donors that have put a total of $6.5 million into his electioneering pockets have been rewarded with a stunning $116 million in TEF handouts. In a recent analysis, the watchdog group Texans for Public Justice found that Caterpillar gave $124,000 to Perry and got more than $9 million from TEF. Lockheed Martin put $232,000 in Perry's pay-to-play scheme and got $5 million back in state money. And GE put in $640,000 and got $4 million from the fund. This is Jim Hightower saying, to get the full report on Perry's piggy bank, go to tpj.org. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Thoughts, comments, questions, something on your mind. Here in the state of Pennsylvania, we've been saying Grover Norquist is probably one of the most powerful guys to, I don't even know if he's ever stepped foot in the state, to be honest, but he's got a governor wrapped around his finger, especially when you talk about the Marcellus Shale. But if you remember this week, you had Alan Simpson, the Republican, former Republican senator from Wyoming, who went after Norquist a little bit and said, hey, you know, if Grover Norquist is the most powerful man in America, he should run for president. So Grover shot back saying, well, you know, maybe he's been drinking too much. So today he went on, suggested that, well, he said that Alan Simpson's old enough to have been there, referring to the tax vote back in 1913, but he's too old to have remembered what happened. So that's a nice way to treat your elder statesman. And it's nice to see Republicans infighting like this. What's even nicer to see is there's a freshman Republican who's kind of looking at the tea leaves going, I got elected on the TE platform. I got elected because I was an anti-tax crusader. I was one of the pledge guys for Norquist. But freshman Representative Reed Ribble from Wisconsin, Republican, says he's done with it. No more pledges. Not taking anyone's pledge. He says, I'm no longer signing any pledges to anybody. I'm not going to sign it next year. You know, at the end of the day, he says, I want to be intellectually honest with the folks back home. And, you know, you take these bizarre tax pledges, you take these pledges, and you get in and you get to see what's going on. You can't change. You can't change your mind, which is why they put those there. They're so narrowly confined, constricting, that are these anybody? I wouldn't vote for a person who took any pledge, even if I wrote it up. For the sole reason is, if he's that narrow-minded in his thinking, do I want him? Do I want someone who's going to weigh all the facts and go, here's the situation, we've got some real problems, and we may need to think a little bit differently. And John Boehner was asked about it. He was asked about some of the things that are going around the super committee. And I love the fact that he came out and said that, well, Norquist is just some random guy. Some random guy, John, who you signed his pledge. Now, what happened this week, and I don't know if you saw it, Jake, but 40 Republicans signed a letter saying, you know what, there's nothing wrong with considering all the options. We need to start looking at other stuff.
And Did you notice where a lot of them come from, Rick?
Well, most of them, a lot more Tea Party types are going, I'm on my job.
Well, also, so some of the senators come from progressive states, come from states where Republican moderation is usually the hallmark of the state, and they know they're going to be in for a tough election, and they're backing off and are being a little more realistic. And first and foremost, Mr. Brown from Massachusetts. I mean, he's dead in the water if he doesn't rescind that.
Yeah.
Because he has a tough opponent.
And I like her. I think that the thing that happened yesterday, I think she handled really well. I don't know if someone would have called me a socialist or if I would have stood there and took it.
Oh.
I'd have probably grabbed him and given him a couple of poundings. But, I felt for the guy. And we talked about this last night. He went to the meeting, and you could tell. You almost picked him out of the room because here was a guy, you could tell he was down on his luck. He'd been unemployed for a while. You could tell he was... But you also could tell when he stood up and he said, I don't want anything to do with you, that he's been spoon-fed all of this right-wing propaganda that he's bought into. Because it's not that they're misinformed, it's that they're informed in only one thought process. So,
I think she can win if she doesn't take a vacation 3 weeks out.
Or go skiing, jet skiing.
Like the last senatorial race up there.
No, I think she'll work her behind off, and hopefully she will be a senator there. But the thing is Norquist said, you can consider all of that stuff, but at the end you just don't vote for any tax increases, which is kind of Boehner's position. Now there's some talk that the grand plan may be in the works because it's obvious to most insiders that the commission, there's going to be no. The Republicans are not moving on the tax issue. Toomey is not going to move on the tax issue. I don't care what anybody says. But we'll see. But I loved Boehner's response also. He said, our focus here is on jobs. And I'm going, really? What focus was that? Because all I saw was a bunch of nonsense. We're talking about the Forgotten 15. The Forgotten 15! You know why they were forgotten? Because they suck. They're the same bad ideas that got us into the mess we're into now. Amazing. Just nuts. I was looking at the Wall Street Journal yesterday. And, you look at some of the polling numbers that have come out. And, even Tea Party people are saying don't cut Social Security. And, I think everybody agrees that we need to increase revenue. We need to cut some spending where we need to. But I think most working class people are saying... Social Security, last resort. Last thing on the table. Medicare, last thing on the table. I'm of the mindset that, if we need to, change things, we need to raise revenue. And I know the Republicans are hell-bent against it, but that's what's gotten us into this mess. I mean, you look at since 1979, the top 1% has been rewarded with after-tax dollars, 270% increase, 275% increase. Folks at the bottom, over that same period, have only seen an 18% increase. I'm sorry. There's a distribution problem there. And I know the Tea Party people all tingly in the panties about their side winning. But is that the kind of distribution you want? And I know hell-bent against redistribution of wealth. That's what Obama wants. Which part of redistribution were you against? Were you against the part where they redistributed it from me to them and from you to them? No, you weren't. Didn't hear anybody screaming about that. We just kind of put our heads down and we took it. And people are in the streets today because they've had enough. And on every issue, you go down the line, Republicans are on the wrong side of it. And you look at the fact that what's going on in Iraq. 75% of the people are supportive of getting the hell out of Iraq. So what do you hear the Republicans talking about? Well, every Republican except Ron Paul, and he wants to get out of everywhere. He wants to bring every troop home from everywhere around the world. Romney said it was an astonishing failure. Naked political calculation or sheer ineptitude. Michelle Bachmann said it was a political decision opposed to a military one. She says, we've been ejected from a country by the people that we liberated and that the United States paid for with precious blood and treasure. Do you see any kind of weirdness in that statement? We've been ejected from a country of people that we liberated. They threw us out. They don't want us there. Kind of tells you what they think of that liberated thing. And Gingrich and Rick Santorum, well, they said it shows that we've lost the war. I say we won. Did exactly what you said you were going to do. Took out Hussein. They're now a functioning democracy. Get the hell out. That's my thought on it. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Mark Price, a labor economist over at Keystone Research, right back after this.
Get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job. They're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
Check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. So the economy added 80,000 jobs last month. They say that the unemployment rate ticked down by a percent, tenth of a percent to 9%. 104,000 private sector jobs. While the cut, gut, and punish Republicans saw to it that the public sector lost 24,000. So there's your quick math, 80,000. Not even keeping up with the demographic growth of the country. Yet all I keep hearing is cut, gut, and punish. I think we're on the wrong path. That's why I've asked our good friend Mark Price, labor economist over at the Keystone Research Center, to come talk to us about the numbers and some other things. Mark, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, Rick. Pleasure to be here.
80,000 jobs. Sounds, good, right? 80,000?
it's the era of diminished expectations.
It's not 900,000 lost like when Obama took office.
Right, yeah.
I think people forget that. Yeah. I think, they say, well, the president hasn't created jobs. Do you remember where we started from?
I think probably the most painful way to express today's pace of growth was from Dean Baker. His estimate is that at 80,000 jobs a month, we would get back to full employment in 33 years.
And I'll be dead by then.
That's right. That's a painful way to look at it. But, yes,
Yeah, it's a, you know, it was, it, it, given how bad things have been, you know, everyone is sort of joyous. I should say everyone, but a large number of people probably are going to look at this jobs report and, you know, have a sigh of relief. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's just the pace of growth isn't enough. And we're seeing the same pattern of, you know, public sector job losses, like you noted in the outset. One of the things we've looked at in Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania's actually been losing jobs in the last 5 months. We're down 24,000, and that's being driven basically by public sector job losses.
So let me ask you this. You know, as we're losing these public sector jobs, you know, these are people who did things that we as a state have, I don't know what it is they were doing, but clerical work or sweeping the streets or paving roads or, you know, doing whatever. How much down the road is it going to cost us? Because I'm assuming most of those tasks were then privatized. And I go back to the guy I met in Wisconsin who was retiring from the state to take a private sector job doing the exact same job he was doing for the state. In fact, doing the exact job for double the income.
Right, yeah. No, we've seen, you know, a number of you know, reports that sort of document that when, you know, when the public sector work is privatized, it ends up costing the taxpayer more money. I think what we're seeing here, mostly in Pennsylvania and around the country, there are a fair number of non-teachers, but the bulk of the job loss at the moment seems to be in the educational sector. So, you know, that's sort of feeding over for kids who are, you know, finding themselves with, you know, a lot more classmates in the same room than they used to. But I think you're absolutely right. To the extent that you're losing public sector workers in other fields, you know, cities are either going without certain key services, so, you know, roads won't be plowed as much, there'll be fewer cops on the beat, there'll be fewer people, you know, repairing things when, you know, a storm destroys some part of the city.
Yeah, we're just putting off down the road. We're wishing, hoping, and praying that nothing bad happens, because if it does, we don't have the money to fix it. On the education front, I'm waiting for the day here in Pennsylvania where, you know, a fire marshal goes into the school and incites a kindergarten class like they did in Michigan for having 55 kids in a kindergarten class.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, or the more scary outcome, right? We've got all these bridges and that need repair and no money to repair them. And, you know, neither Congress nor the Pennsylvania legislature is taking any steps to move forward to repair bridges. We're going to have to do it. You know, it's just a matter of time, and it seems everyone's twiddling their thumbs rather than taking action.
No, I've taken the position that I think there are some folks who are trying to thin the herd, and they hope when the bridges collapse, they'll take some people with them, so there won't be as many people, and there'll be some jobs available, because I'm sure those people who are out on the bridges had jobs, so that, you know, it'd be good for the economy. It's the whole concept of disaster capitalism. The more disaster we can create, the more crumbling of our country we can create, the more profit there'll be for the corporate form.
That's a scary world, Rick.
But I don't think I'm all that far off if you look at what's going on.
No, I mean, you know, it is a bleak environment where the people whose job it is basically to make sure that, you know, public needs get met are sort of being obstinate and choosing not to meet them. It is really remarkable. I mean, especially, you know, you probably have heard, you know, what happened in the Senate on Thursday night. You know, there was a bipartisan bill to expand spending on infrastructure, and basically a minority of people in the Senate filibustered and killed the bill.
Because we want to drill, baby, drill.
Exactly. It is a very bizarre sort of period we're in.
But here's the thing, Mark. In God we trust.
Well, you know, you do have to take care of the priorities.
And, you know, I go, okay, we got that out of the way. And I'm one who likes to think that history repeats itself.
Right.
So we've done this. And when we first did this, when we first made the country, the official motto of the country, In God We Trust, was 1956. Up until that point, it had been the E Pluribus Unum. But, you know, in 56, we decided, In God We Trust, we're going that direction. In 1956, and you can check this, they pushed through one of the largest infrastructure spending bills in the history of the country that built the Eisenhower interstate system. So we've done the God thing. I'm with you. Okay. We've reaffirmed that. Can we do the road building thing too?
Yeah, that would be nice, as opposed to, you know, having to say a little prayer every time you drive over a bridge, right?
Well, there, that's one I didn't think of. See?
You're on your own.
That's why you're the smart guy. That's why you're the expert here. Given me, maybe that's the rationale. So let me ask you, as a labor economist, as the great labor economist, how do we turn this thing around? I mean, what I'm looking at in Washington, I don't see any hope.
Yeah, no, and neither do I. I mean, there just seems to be.
Well, let me just shoot myself now then.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm sorry. I wish I could give you hope. We know what the solution is. I mean, the solution is you've got to spend money. You've got to, you know, extend state aid to local governments and to help sort of prevent teacher layoffs. You've got to invest in infrastructure, and you've got to extend unemployment insurance. And each of those pieces just seems unable to get enough votes in Congress. And I think, you know, it's things are made worse by the fact that, you know, we are in the middle of a presidential campaign. I think it's easy to get distracted from. It shouldn't be easy to get distracted given that, you know, unemployment's at 9%. But, you know, again, it's in a situation where there's a big enough minority to prevent careful action. And sometimes it seems like it's, you know, designed basically, you know, if you do anything that helps the economy, you're helping the existing incumbent in the White House. And it's become political, which is quite unfortunate. And I don't see anything changing unless, you know, either the situation gets worse or, you know, more, you know, town squares get occupied.
Or more town squares have to turn off the lights, like in Michigan, in Highland Park, Michigan, where they didn't just turn off the power. The lights, they didn't just turn the lights off. They actually pulled the poles up, the light poles, and they're selling them.
Oh, well, that's how
broke they are. And, you know, to highlight the fact that these towns and these cities and these states are broke, this is a perfect example. Now, they couldn't pay their electric bills, so they shut the lights off. Now they're ripping up the poles to sell the poles.
You know, there were a pair of guys in Pittsburgh who were, you know, trying to cart off a bridge. So, you know, maybe we should get out in front of our local government.
Amazing stuff. So let's say you had the wand. What's the answer here? I've been of the mindset that government has to be the employer of last resort because obviously business is not going to do it.
Right.
How do we get this thing jump started? I mean, they've done a nice job of stabbing in the heart Keynesian theory. How do we get this moving?
Yeah, well, I mean, simple thing first is you do no harm. And so two simple ways not to do harm. One, you want to extend unemployment benefits. For another year, the estimate, because if unemployment benefits aren't extended, I mean, there are people now that are losing their jobs, even as we speak, and each month, and those folks are coming into a labor market, they're facing twice as many people as they used to when they're looking for a job, so it takes longer. If unemployment benefits expire after December, those folks are going to have less income, that's going to lead to less spending, and, you know, the current estimate is that'll you know, bleed another 500,000 jobs out of the economy, right? So it's sort of job losses on top of the public sector job losses we're seeing. So you want to do no harm and extend unemployment insurance. You also want to do proactive things like investment in infrastructure, which helps create jobs in the construction sector. It also long-term, you know, reduce business costs and you know, hopefully raises wages for workers. But, you know, those are simple things that you can do, and we know what, you know, the steps are. It's just, again, it's there's no political will, not enough people with the vision that, you know, we're going to take, you know, the hard choices and spend money on infrastructure. We're going to extend unemployment benefits. We're going to, you know, move forward with policies that helpfully boost employment.
So let's look at this from a different angle. Let's say we don't extend unemployment. And all those, we boot all those people off unemployment and they suffer. And then they go out into the streets and they riot and they carry on and they, you know, they basically live in the streets. So we have mass suffering, mass pain. Do you think that would jumpstart the idea of getting, spending an infrastructure? Do you think the Republicans would get it then?
No, I think, okay. Basically we've got to go through another election. So we are in a bit of a straitjacket, right? That, we need an election to help sort of deliver the message clearly what people want to hear and see. That's why it's also unfortunate that, you know, the Obama administration is sort of not itself always making the right call on a lot of policy issues, and you know, it's sort of making it much harder to clearly distinguish between the two parties on these key issues.
Yeah, Colombia.
You know, for instance, you know, 60 folks in Congress, you know, told the super committee that it's okay to cut Medicare. You know, it's sort of they're working very hard to make it impossible to distinguish between the two parties.
Yeah, they all seem to be the Wall Street Party.
Right.
So let me ask you this. You know, I saw the Fed is, I guess at this point, not doing anything. It was the kind of the thought that I got from them. They're not going to try and do anything. I'm going to leave that to Congress. What should the Fed be doing?
First of all, I have to laugh because that was one of the most bizarre Fed, minutes we have seen in a long time, right? Oh, my goodness. We've looked at the data. We've looked at the numbers. The economy's growing more slowly, and we're going to do nothing. we live in very strange times. There's not a lot that the Fed can do at this stage. I mean, they've been trying some things to help, you know, bring down interest rates. There are some, you know, they can always be more creative, but I think at this point they really are. There's not a lot more that they can do. But we get a lot more effectiveness if we can get action out of Congress. Like I said, I'm not expecting that unless we get an election. But you never know. You know, you're right. We could get lucky. There may be movement on any number of these issues just because the overwhelming, you know, sort of public view of a lot of these issues will push people. I mean, one example is unemployment insurance. I mean, a lot of local congressmen, regardless of their party, often do get that. You know, they've got big manufacturers that have workers that rely on, depend on unemployment insurance when that manufacturer shrinks.
Right.
So you do get surprising levels of support across party lines for doing things like extending unemployment benefits. So I think there's a vague possibility that we'll get more out of Congress. But the Fed's role here, you know, they are pretty limited in what they can do just because, again, interest rates are already practically zero.
Last question I got for you, or last line of question. Earlier in the week, I got into my way back machine. I went and took time travel back 10 years when the Fed was worried what they were going to do because we were paying the debt off so fast. They had no idea what they were going to do. Greenspan said, we don't know what the future looks like. We're going to be debt-free. And you go, in just 10 years, we have gone from the future's so bright, I've got to wear shades, to, oh, my God, the sky is falling.
Yeah.
And I go back and I go, you know, there are a couple of very key things that you have to blame it on. And Obama ain't it.
Sure. Right. I mean, you know, unfunded wars, large-scale tax cuts, and then, you know, worst recession since the Great Depression. And those things together, you know, that's certainly not the current, you know, occupant of the White House's fault. There's no question about that. But, you know, how quickly we've forgotten our history.
Yeah, and, you know, I go back to that. And, you know, Greenspan didn't, you know, just didn't know what he was going to do. Had not a clue. I think I got the clip somewhere. It's just amazing. Anyway, Mark Price, I appreciate the time. Our good friend at the Keystone Research Center, labor economist. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you, Rick.
Always great talking. Quick break. Back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
Seems like things are kind of upside down. Show the view someone to turn around.
Every time I hear this song, it just makes me chuckle. Get on board the Herman Cain train. Could that be harassment? Could it? Could that be something that, I don't know. Herman. Got himself into a whole world of trouble. And, you know, they're saying, oh, it's a high-tech lynching. I'm going, really? Herman, the guy who's the unorthodox candidate playing the race card? Really? He was giving a speech today, and you gotta give the guy credit when you've got to kiss up to the Koch brothers, you do it in a big way. So he had.
I am the Koch brothers' brother from another mother.
There you go.
Yes, I'm their brother from another mother, and proud of it.
Yeah, And I was going to say he doesn't have to really brown nose, and if he does, we wouldn't know. Because look, all of the Republican candidates have got their heads so far up the Koch's behind, it's scary. And like Romney said, you know, they are the engine of the Tea Party. They're the money machine, man. Sad. So with him being the brother, he's trying to suck up and get their endorsement. I'm not so sure. I think that Romney's going to be their guy because after all, he's the Wall Street insider. So we'll see how it goes. But you know, I've been kind of laughing at this whole how this whole thing has unfolded. Now, sexual harassment is very serious, and I'm not laughing at that. I'm laughing at how this is all unfolded. And I look at the Cain campaign saying that they're considering suing Politico, which good luck on that. What I think would happen if he did, and I don't think he's going to, I think he has to put that face out there that, yeah, well, we're gonna sue them. He has to do that for show. If he did, I think all of those clauses to keep people's mouths shut go away. Those people get pulled into court. And then it all comes out. So I don't think he's really going to want to do that. He's going to grandstand. He's going to do a lot of stuff. But I really don't think he's going to want to go down the I'm going to sue path. And, in fact, I think the campaigns are trying to pull back because they canceled the big interview with his wife, Gloria, on fake news on Fox. So they pulled her out of that. Because, I don't know that you really want to get her involved in it because – who knows how she reacts? You know, when you put Hillary Clinton out in front of a microphone, you know, she'll keep the party line like she did. But, you know, I would have watched that interview, Jake. I would have watched Gloria Cain on fake news on Fox, just hoping that maybe they would have asked a question that wasn't scripted.
You think he's staying by her, man? I think so.
Oh, I think so.
You know, as I've seen and as America has seen time and time again, the worst part is denying what happened. I think America, look, I mean, yes, he's a conservative candidate, and they tend to look at moral issues. But you know what? If he would have come out and said, hey, look, this happened a bunch of years ago. I made a stupid mistake.
Exactly.
I asked for forgiveness of the women. I shouldn't have done it. I shouldn't have done it. You know, God forgive me. And put it behind him. Instead, he's denying it. And when he denies it, he gets himself deeper and deeper and deeper.
And why don't we get that? Why don't men get that? It's not just politicians. I think it's all men. I mean, why don't these politicos get it? Just come out, take your comeuppance, take your, you know, your beating for the short period, but be honest about it. It defies logic. You know, when Wiener was going through his whole thing, when someone asks you something that specific, they know. So you be honest about it. He did everything you could possibly do wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I still don't think he should have resigned. I think that's for the voters to decide. But that's a water under the bridge at this point.
What Cain has done, once you lie, then it's not just a matter of sexual harassment or forgiveness. Then it's a matter of integrity.
Yep.
Can we trust this man?
So evidently the restaurant association, after the woman said that she didn't really want to get into it, because she's kind of backed out of coming public. And I don't think I would want to either. And I wouldn't want, you know, my wife or my daughter or anybody I know to throw themselves in the middle of that. Politico found out. They probably pulled her into it. Someone, you know, leaked it to them. For her sake, I would stay the hell out of it. But, you know, there's part of me that also says you got to wonder who got to her to say, look, we'll make your life a living you-know-what if you come out against this guy. And I don't know that I would get into it. But the Restaurant Association after, and you got to wonder if that was choreographed as well, that after she said that, you know what, I've said as much as I'm going to say, this is as far as I'm going, and then they come out with, oh, yeah, we would have let her say whatever she wants. What I'd like to see now is her come out and say, yeah, well, I'll take you up on that. But it's not going to happen. So Rick Santorum, he's been kicking around Iowa, kicked off his Faith, Family, and Freedom Tour. Faith, Family, and Freedom Tour. That phrase sounds familiar. Faith, Family, and Freedom. Oh, yeah. The award that the Family Research Council gave to deadbeat dad Joe Walsh, a Republican from Illinois. In fact, they gave him the support of, you know, the Faith, Family, and Freedom Award because he's worthy of their admiration. He has unwavering support of the family. Unwavering support, except he doesn't want to pay for them. But anyway, Tricky Ricky kicked off the Faith, Family, and Freedom Tour, doing the whole social thing because he really has nothing else. You know, basically going around saying, hey, let's get rid of the Ninth Circuit of Appeals. Let's make, you know, let's make personhood for an amendment to the Constitution. Yes. Go back to the don't ask, don't tell, you know, all that stuff. Reinstitute the Mexico policy. Stop taxpayer funding or promotion of abortions overseas. Make sure we make sure that those people over there, they either learn abstinence or they learn nothing. And I look at this guy and I go, really, do you have nothing better to do? I mean, you see what the Republicans are doing. Nothing. Where are the jobs? You know, I got that crummy pledge. It's kind of fallen off my desk. I've got it somewhere around here. But the pledge, what happened to the pledge? What happened to the laser-like focus on jobs, jobs, jobs? What happened to that? I know, you got the forgotten 15. Yeah, yeah. The 15 bad ideas that were bad 20 years ago. Great new ideas that failed 20 years ago. Yeah, let's talk about that again. Nothing out of them, though. No vision, no leadership, no idea, no clue. And we're going to struggle because of it. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, talk a little bit about personhood. I guess corporations are people, right? Maybe not. Back after this. I'm taking all that money and shipping it offshore.
job you're looking for.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. 60 protesters from Occupy Chicago, Stand Up Chicago, and several unions disrupted Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's speech on state budget reforms in Chicago Thursday. The protesters bought tickets to the speech and were seated at tables. They interrupted Walker as he began to speak. Leah Edmonds was one of the 60 who gave Governor Walker a dose of the people's mic.
It was people from Chicago's Teachers Union, from Service Employees International Union, to be there with a bunch of community and labor allies, all of us standing together. It felt very powerful to be able to speak to Governor Walker in that way.
After about 15 minutes, the protesters inside left with no arrests, chanting as they went. To help heal America's economy, National Nurses United has just a prescription, a meaningful financial transaction tax on Wall Street. The Registered Nurses Union was on the march Thursday in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, San Francisco, and at the G20 meeting in France. About 1,500 nurses, joined by the AFL-CIO, Occupy Wall Street activists, and other supporters, rallied outside the White House and marched to the Treasury Department in Washington. Liz Jacobs was one of the National Nurses United RNs taking part in the San Francisco action.
There's an unhealthy economy, and we know what the solution is, and we need to go to where the revenue is that will heal America, and that is Wall Street and the tax on Wall Street.
Red Cross workers in Connecticut are on strike today after they failed to reach an agreement with the blood supply organization. Jesse Russell reports.
The workers represented by Ask Me Council 4 are walking picket lines in Norwalk and Farmington, calling attention to 2 years of working without a contract. The primary issue holding up talks is the number of licensed nurses required at blood drives. The Red Cross has consistently lowered the number over the years, and the workers are concerned it raises safety issues. Other disagreements involve health care and scheduling. The Red Cross workers have additionally expressed frustration over the way the organization has treated them during the contract negotiations. The National Labor Relations Board has filed a number of lawsuits against the Red Cross for violations of unfair labor practices. Disaster workers are not on strike, minimizing the impact of the strike on relief from the storms that have hit New England in the past week. The Red Cross has been importing extra blood reserves from other states into Connecticut since the union made it known a walkout was on the horizon.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Thoughts, comments, questions, something on your mind? You can also email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So there are about a half a dozen states, you know, Mississippi, Florida, Ohio, who have got anti-abortion measures on the ballot. Basically, the idea is to declare a fertilized human egg as a legal person. And that leads to a whole bunch of really weird kind of legal outcomes, I think. Too broad, too much, too open to interpretation. In fact, even a lot of the Republicans, Haley Barbour for one, kind of going, nah, a little bit too far for us. But you look at Arkansas in May, they may have one of these personhood amendments on their ballot. And the people over at the Center for Reproductive Rights have come up with approximately 600 new state regulations this year alone. And again, for me, this whole attack is not about Roe versus Wade. It's about Griswold. It's about taking contraceptive family planning away from people. And you look in Wisconsin, they just passed a abstinence-only bill prohibiting teachers from talking about anything having to do with contraception. And, you know, it's this kind of head in the sand stuff that gets people into trouble. I mean, I got to be honest. I'm worried about the future. I don't know if you saw this. Next Tuesday, voters in Virginia, they're going to be deciding whether they want to elect the former state representative David Black as a state senator. Fortunately for the folks in Virginia, Black has a substantial record by which you can judge him. In 2005, he proposed investigating all Virginians to see if any of them who were gay adopted children. So he was kind of against that. That was one of his proposals. He also is well known for sending plastic fetuses to lawmakers to advertise his anti-abortion stance. Also, he fought to allow pharmacies to refuse to sell birth control, again, going back to what I said about Griswold. But he still had his shining moment ahead of him. He still had that shining moment because he said about the prosecution of a spousal rape case in 2002, how on earth, and I'm still kind of just amazed at this, how on earth could you validly get a conviction in a husband-wife rape when they're living together, sleeping in the same bed, and she is in a nightie? If I need to explain that to you, we have a serious problem. We have a serious problem. And you're probably the last guy that should be sitting in any power position. Because understand, rape, understand sexual harassment, those are power grabs. And I look at this recent University of Michigan study that found 9 out of 10 women, 9 out of 10, said that they've experienced sexual offensive sexual remarks, or have been told that they could not do their jobs properly because of their sex. Now, 1 in 10 women claim that they've been promised promotions or better treatment if they would just be, well, you know, a little cooperative here or there, and a little, you know, little copy room tryst. And, you know, the more I think about this thing with Herman Cain, to me it shows the abuse of power. It shows me an arrogance. And I think back to when I first started dating my wife, who worked for a guy who, as I remember, there were only female employees. And she would come home and she would tell me some of the, you know, some of the nonsense that he would say. And, oh, she blew it off. Ah, he's just joking. And I was like, he's not joking. The whole, hey, we can get a room and share a hot tub thing, that's not a joke. Hey, you know, you want to move up and be, you know, a supervisor? Well, we can make that happen. That's not a joke. And I remember at the time going, you know, all it takes is your word, and I'm down there kicking the snot out of him. It means you're probably going to lose your job, but I'll feel a lot better. And maybe, you know, maybe that's what we need to go back to. My grandfather was always a big fan of making a citizen out of somebody. A couple of good slaps across the head, and, you know, make a citizen out of someone. Maybe the days where, you know, people don't fear that anymore. I think we've become a society where we don't fear repercussion. Where I grew up when I was a kid, you said something about somebody's mother, it was throwdown time. That was the end of it. You could rip on each other, you could make fun of each other's girlfriends, whatever, but you said something about mama, day over. And, you know, there's part of me that thinks that, Jake, that maybe, you know, meet me behind the flagpole ain't going to cut it no more. Maybe we need to, you know, get smack up across the back of the head. Just my thought. But then again, you know, I've never really been the most politically correct when it comes to that. But really, I mean, if it's your daughter, if it's your wife, if it's your mother, do you want them in a situation where, hey, he's just joking. He's joking about the hot tub. That's all. You know, he's just being a guy. And look, I'm the first one to say it. You know, for a while when I started working in the freight industry, you'd see those guys beating up on, you know, saying lewd things around the women. Because you always had one maybe worked in the office, or maybe one that was a dock supervisor, heaven forbid. And you'd get people who would just say the vilest, hey, let's see how far we can go. Yeah, now that I'm a little bit older, yeah, probably not the right thing to do. Not that I ever did it. but I was around people who did, and I you know, at times I feel bad for not speaking up where I should have. And maybe it's a change in culture. And maybe having this discussion with the Herman Cain train, maybe will be a learning experience. You know, maybe, because you know, you see it. You do. You see people say dumb things. Whether they think they mean it or not, they mean it. Because we're guys. I mean, I guess that's just how our brains are wired somewhat. But it's interesting to see this whole thing develop in the whole, well, you know, it's just a hot tech lynching. And I still love Ann Coulter.
That's why our blacks are so much better than their blacks.
I love her. I love that crazy woman.
Oh.
But no, there's some things that we need to really be thinking about there. Anyway, I don't know if you saw this. A general just got booted out of Afghanistan, this Major General Peter Fuller. Was interviewed by Politico. And to be honest, I don't think he's wrong. He said that the Karzai administration was erratic, saying that the Afghanistan folks would side with Pakistan if Pakistan declared war on the U.S. was probably kind of dumb. He said, "Why don't you just poke me in the eye with a needle?" He said, "You got to be kidding me." He said, "I'm sorry, we just gave you $11.6 billion, and you're telling me I don't really care." And I don't see anything wrong with what he said. He said that the Afghan government is isolated from reality. And he think, you know, that they think that the U.S. is paved with gold. And part of it is we've done some dumb things over there. We've just poured money into that area. There's part of me that says this guy is right, and it's a damn shame he was removed. He said the Afghan leaders don't understand the sacrifices that America is making to provide for their security. And he says, "I think that's part of my job to educate them." And well, they took him out. They have replaced him, and I think that's a bad thing. Because at the end of this, I think the American people have the right idea when it comes to Afghanistan and Iraq. There is no winning here. We've done what we can do. Staying longer, in my opinion, just prolongs a bad situation. Now, I mean, you know, people say, "Well, what if they rise up?" And well, you take care of that by having other people in the region step in. We've done all we can do. I think this is now a job for the international community. Time to get out.
Well, you know, the irony is, and you know, you and I both have a good friend, Rick, and he works in Afghanistan. I don't want to divulge too much, but let me say this. I mean, he has said repeatedly that the soldiers there know, the ones who have the feet on the ground, a good many of them know it's time to leave. It's time to leave. We've accomplished all we can.
And you know, while we're talking about that, we can't extend unemployment benefits. We can't rebuild our roads, our bridges. There are folks in the Republican Party who are hell-bent on keeping us there, and it makes no sense. Because I think the people I think the American people have seen it. We've run it. It's run its course. It's time to come home. Pretty simple. If we can't afford to pay doctors and lawyers and teachers, and we can't afford to pay public service workers, and we can't afford to do the things that are going to run this country and get us out of trouble, why in the hell are we over there? Obviously, don't want us. And I think Karzai has been pretty clear about that. And same thing with Iraq. If they don't want you there, how are you a liberator? Now, I go back to that Michelle Bachmann quote. They ejected us, the people who liberated them. That's because they never saw you as a liberator. They saw you as an occupier. So if they have ejected you, that means they don't want you. And I think Michelle has a problem with that. Understand, the American people don't want you. In fact, they don't want you as much as the Iraqis don't want us there. Time for her to drop out, even though I do find her comical. But, you know, when you look at this, if we don't have money to educate children here in this country, we don't have money to make sure the children in this country have health insurance. What the hell are we doing everywhere else going, "Oh, yeah, let's help them"? And that's where I agree with some of the T-Twizzlers. You know, before we go shipping money overseas, maybe start doing some things here. Now, I'm in favor of helping places where we can, but at the end of the day, we got to take care of it. Charity starts at home. You fix your roads and bridges at home. You fix your schools and your hospitals and all this stuff here at home. You know, I look at Carlisle Hospital, a report in the paper today, not doing so well. A whole bunch of violations, didn't get their accreditation. Why? Staffing levels. Why? Contracting problems. We're using outsourced folks. It's mind-blowing. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Let's take a quick break. Back after this.
You and me, but we're not unarmed. Our weapon solidarity. Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood. The list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the worker.
War on the worker.
Proud defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
Tell me with whom you walk, goes the old adage, and I'll tell you who you are. Maybe you're wondering just who the heck this Rick Perry guy is. This loud-talking, slow-thinking Texas buckaroo who says he should be your president. His PR storyline is that he's just a straight-talking conservative politico out of Paint Rock, Texas. But it's been ages since Perry walked with the good folks of Paint Rock. Now in his 27th year in political office, this guy has consistently walked with Mr. Money and been the loyal servant of the corporate powers. Let's take a peek at Perry's piggy bank. Not his personal money, though it is curious how he became a millionaire while doing nothing but government work. Rather, check out the Texas Enterprise Fund, a stash of some $400 million tax dollars that Governor Perry has essentially used as a political slush fund. TEF is supposed to be a cache of state cash for him to dole out as incentives for corporations to create jobs. But its job creation performance is somewhere between pathetic and a scam. The fund has, however, been a boon for Perry's re-election campaigns and for the coffers of his corporate benefactors. For example, 20 of the governor's top corporate donors that have put a total of $6.5 million into his electioneering pockets have been rewarded with a stunning $116 million in TEF handouts. In a recent analysis, the watchdog group Texans for Public Justice found that Caterpillar gave $124,000 to Perry and got more than $9 million from TEF. Lockheed Martin put $232,000 in Perry's pay-to-play scheme and got $5 million back in state money. And GE put in $640,000 and got $4 million from the fund. This is Jim Hightower saying, to get the full report on Perry's piggy bank, go to tpj.org.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
We found a better way of making it seem clean. We built an electronic voting machine, and then we sold these suckers nationwide. But we're the only ones who know what's on the inside. You push the buttons and our voting machine keeps track. We made it so it's very easy to hack. Call for a recount, it will probably fail, because our machines don't leave no paper trail.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. So, political season upon us, and in the very small town of New Liberty, Iowa, their ballot is blank. They have nobody running for mayor, no one running for city council, no one running for dog catcher, nothing. But according to the residents, they're okay with it because they know each other, and they'll just write somebody in. And I'm going, really, you don't bother, you know, don't bother having primaries. Don't bother having races. Nah. We'll decide when we get there. So I was thinking about it. If there was someone you didn't like, you know, we're gonna make you mayor. Just to see him turn it down. Anyway, Representative Keith Ellis, Democrat from Minnesota, he's appealing to the Occupy Wall Street folks, saying, look, you know what? Add to the list of things you got there, voting restrictions. all across this country, we've been seeing reports of state after state run by Republicans going after voting rights. Whether it's the young folks, whether it's minorities, whether it's low-income folks, whether it's people with disability or seniors, the Republicans have lasered in on how do we hold the vote down? How do we make sure that we can suppress the vote so that they can win? Because understand, 2012 is really a very important election in that if things stay as they are now, you may quite well see another 2 years of gridlock and possibly another 4 years of absolute gridlock, which means as a nation, we don't grow. So we, as a nation of voters, we got to pick an ideology. We got to pick an idea, say, okay, well, what do we do? Do we go the right-wing way of cut, gut, and punish? Do we hand more to the top 1% in the hopes that maybe this time, maybe now that we've given them more than they could possibly ever have wanted, maybe now they'll do what they say they will do and create jobs and leave us a crumb on the floor? I mean, do we double down on the bad policies that got us into this mess? Actually, I would argue quadruple down, because we've been going this path for quite some time now. Do we have another tax reform bill of 86 where we lower that top tax rate down to, 20%, and then do away with all of the deductions, and only in two or three more years they'll all be back for the wealthy and you and I get screwed again? Because remember, out of the tax reform bill of 86, while they love to say how they did away with the loopholes for corporations that are all back and plentiful, you're still being taxed on unemployment benefits, which is one of the things that they took away from us, along with the ability to deduct any credit card interest or any car payment interest or any interest that you paid on bank loans. Took that away, made sure that was gone for you and me. I don't see anybody out there lobbying for us to get that stuff back. And what Ellison's saying, he's going, look, get out there, look at how we get people to the polls. Stop with the suppression. Stop with the curtailing of people's rights. And I think it's a smart move. I'm hoping that the Occupy people will pick up on it. And you look at the fact that 196 House Democrats signed a letter to state elections officials saying, hey, please stop the war on voting. Stop this nonsensical attack. And it's only gonna wake people up, I think, until they walk to the polls and someone says, sorry, I know you've been voting here for 20 or 30 or 50 years, but you can't vote because the Republicans have passed this rule or this procedure that completely changes the way we've done things. Because they're looking for a problem for their solution. Because at the end of the day, no one can show me where all this voting fraud's going on. I can find some voting fraud, though. Ann Coulter said she lived one place, voted in another. Mitt Romney, said he lived one place, was actually living in another. There's some voting fraud there. We just don't prosecute that stuff, do we? But the more I look at this, we're going to have to make that choice. The voting people are going to have to choose between, you cannot split the ticket again. You're going to have to decide. Do we want to continue down the same failed path of, here, wealthy, go do something. You're the smart people. You made money. Figure out how to make more and continue outsourcing jobs, continue tax policies that benefit them. Or are we going to say, you know what, we need to have a new deal, if you will. We need to have a fair deal, a square deal, something that's going to reinvest in this nation, put people back to work, reinvesting in roads and bridges and infrastructure, airports, waterways, dams, you name it. There's a lot that needs to be done. That's going to have to be decided at the ballot box, because it's apparent to me, and I think it's apparent to just about everyone, that Washington is not going to come up with a solution. There are no big ideas in D.C. right now. There are no race to the moon. There are no massive interstate development programs. There's none of that. And as I said earlier, I read off a couple of the bills that were passed this week instead of creating jobs. And I'm sure to someone those were very important. But to get this economy moving, to get the country back on the right track, not doing it. That ain't it. So it's about making sure that we come to grips with our own ideology, have our own consistent worldview, and vote for people who are going to say, you know what? Let's invest in this country for a change, instead of. You know, how frustrating is it? You know, I got to be honest with you, Jake. You know, the Democratic Party has kind of let me down in a lot of ways. You know, I look at these trade deals. More bad job-killing trade deals. That's what the Republicans chose to move out of Obama's job plan. And it shows to me sometimes that the Democrats are pretty dumb when it comes to negotiating. The parts that were in there to entice the Republicans to pass things that would help us, the negatives that were in the bill, they let them pass, and all the stuff that would help us, they filibustered. And Democrats have done nothing.
Well, at the end of the day, and I agree with you, we tend to blame the Republicans, and rightfully so, but on many issues, including health care, including free trade, what does it come down to? It comes down to the corroding influence of money. And there's a huge, gigantic, it's the 1,000-pound gorilla. And I don't know the answer, because you're going to have to persuade the very people who are prospered, and prospered mightily, let's not kid ourselves, you're going to have to persuade them to change the system. And short of that, you're going to have to get them out of office, and you're going to have to fight that just huge wave of money. It does not put the American people in a good light. It does not put them in a, you know, the American people, sadly, American people and their freedoms are the back against the wall.
Yeah, I look at that kid, the guy who went to Elizabeth Warren's meeting. To her town hall and called her a socialist whore. I don't want anything to do with you because you're that Occupy Wall Street person. And that's what he's been told constantly. The megaphone of the mega rich has been in his ear constantly. The wealth class has his full undivided attention. The Tea Party, funded by the engine of the Tea Party, the Koch brothers, have his undivided attention, and they have sold him a bill of goods that has put him in this position. Look, I'm as anti-government as anybody when it comes to the bad things they do. But look, at the end of the day, there are some things only we can do through our government. And there are some things that I want private, for-profit corporations to do. I want them making my tennis shoes and my jeans, and I want them building cars, and I want them doing all of those things. But when it comes to health care, I'm going to trust the government to pay for it. I think you need to have a pool. And whether it's, and there's part of me that says, I don't care whether it's a government pool or it's a profit, if it's a private pool. It's got to be a pool, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be part of all of us. But they're doing everything they can do to divide. And I look at that, I go back to that guy, and I know so many people like him who have, you know, they've been in that little group who all they hear a constant drumbeat of government bad, small government, limited government. And when you hear that, it's ineffective.
And you know what's sad, Rick? I mean, we boast to the rest of the world that we're the best, and we're the shining star, and we're the shining light. You know what? This country can easily... It doesn't have to be a national. It doesn't have to be socialized medicine. It doesn't. And certainly, that we don't want what we have. But we can come up with our own Americanized system to provide health care for every American at a reasonable price. It can be done if you take the corroding influence of money and political power and corporate power. We can do it. There are other countries who are infinitely poorer, who have far less resources, who have better health care systems. And we as a nation should look at that and say, come on, we can do better.
Yep. Mike Bloomberg surprised me yesterday. He said, we have presidential candidates who don't believe in science. I mean, just to show you where the Republican mindset is. Now, this is Bloomberg, who was a Republican. I guess he was a Democrat for a while. I guess he's now an independent. He says, we've got presidential candidates who don't believe in science. He said, I mean, just think about it. Can you imagine a company of any size in the world where the CEO said, I don't believe in science, and that person surviving to the end of the day? He goes, are you kidding me? It's mind-boggling. And you look at some of the names of the companies that would boggle Bloomberg's mind. The Koch brothers, who run Koch Industries. The CEO of Whole Foods is John Mackey. Ryanair CEO Michael Leary, Exxon Mobil CEO Rex Tillerson. All these folks don't believe in it. This is why I'm telling you, folks, we've got to make this choice at the ballot box. Because Republicans, what they want to do is those are the people who run this country. Exxon Mobil, Koch brothers. Those are not family. Those are now household names. We know who they are. And now you look under the guise of a transportation bill. You got every single Republican, with the exception of Olympia Sentinel, who voted to suspend the Clean Air Act on toxic emissions from industrial boilers, cement factories, and waste incinerators. Every Democrat, except for Joe Manchin, voted against the bill. And you go, what are we doing? Is this what we're going to do to create jobs? Give up our air, give up our water, give up our environment? That's what the Republicans want. Drill, baby, drill. And like Corbett said, maybe we should put gas wells on school property. Put it right next to the lunchroom. In fact, maybe we could just tap it right out of the ground and use it to generate heat in the schools. Just a thought. Let's take a quick break. Right back with Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. We'll be right back after this.
Sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
I'm David Thoman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. While the rest of the news media is all Herman Cain all the time, we're going to move in a little different direction. We're going to talk with Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
It has been all Herman all day. Let's not talk about him.
Let's not.
Let's just put that behind us. What's going on overseas? The Greek president, did he get the vote?
Yes, Prime Minister Papandreou narrowly survived a no-confidence vote late Friday night, but he's prepared to step down to make way for a bipartisan government that would approve Greece's latest international bailout deal and pave the way to elections. Quite a thing, really. Now, he says he's going to explore the composition of a transitional unity government in a meeting with the president tomorrow. But it doesn't really resolve the continuing political drama, including the composition of the next government. So it's all very, very, very complicated, but basically it staves things off. There will be some kind of a unity government. Whether it'll be a very quick government or whether it'll be government going on for a few months isn't quite clear. But the thing is that it gets us through for a little while they will probably get their next tranche of money in the middle of December, which is when they need it,
right.
And we'll be able to move forward. The difficulty really is now, it really moves to Italy. I mean, that doesn't mean to say that Greece is out of the woods by any step of any kind of imagination, but the difficulty really moves to Italy, and they, of course, are now under the eye of the IMF.
It's interesting. I've been kind of watching from, you know, watching from the distance how Sarkozy and some of the others have looked to Obama to kind of step in, and he really hasn't made, at least I don't think he's made any real commitments to Greece.
No. Well, we have said all along, the U.S. has, and it's been very, very clear, and he has stayed very much on message while he's been overseas, that the Europeans can get, you know, the Europeans have the resources to deal with this, which is the U.S. way of saying, we're not spending a dime on you.
Yeah, but the question is, how deep are our banks into this? How intertwined is the international banking system that eventually it comes back on us anyway?
We're all very intertwined. Stock market and the bond markets are terribly, terribly intertwined. There's no question about it. It's one of the reasons why everybody reeled and roiled when Papandreou announced earlier in the week that he was going to have this referendum after the Eurozone deal had already been arranged. Everyone was just shocked and surprised and horrified that he was going to do this because it was unnecessary.
And what we're not seeing any way of putting up capital borders or any way of staving off another situation like this into the future. We're just doubling down and saying, oh, let's cozy up even more, it seems to me. Again, bad direction. Good sign for me here, though. It looks, I guess, Google considering leaving the International Chamber of Commerce?
Yes. They're very frustrated, Google is, with the chamber support for legislation that will force Internet companies to police websites that peddle pirated movies and fake Viagra. Yahoo just left the chamber in October, largely over the chamber support of Senator Patrick Leahy's online piracy bill called the Protect IP Act. And a source close to Google, which usually means somebody inside Google, said the company is frustrated about paying dues to an organization promoting legislation that would basically, quote, impose new liabilities, unquote, on Google. And a second source close to the company confirmed that thinking. And then the Consumer Electronics Association, one of the country's largest trade groups, is also thinking about leaving the chamber over its aggressive campaign for this same Senate bill and the companion bill introduced in the House last week, the Stop Online Piracy Act. Because this bill, these bills, would require search engines and online ad companies to clamp down on websites that illegally peddle copyrighted movies, fake pharmaceuticals, and other counterfeit products if served with a court order by the Justice Department. And CEA and some Google executives have publicly argued that the bills would threaten innovation and encourage censorship of protected speech on the web. And many in the tech industry believe the chamber's doing the bidding of Hollywood and other deep-pocketed members of the content industry.
Yeah, I just don't know how you would enforce it, though. I mean, it is such a vast operation. I don't know how you would get in and enforce it without really infringing on I guess there really is no privacy on the Internet, but I just don't know how you'd enforce it.
Exactly. So it's possible that Google's going to leave the chamber. That would be quite a big leave. I mean, with Yahoo also, you know, as you know, online piracy isn't the only policy that's been putting the chamber in hot water recently. There have been utility companies, Exelon, Pacific Gas and Electric Co., PNM Resources, and Apple. They all left in 2009 to protest the chamber's stance on global warming.
Yeah, I mean, they're on the wrong side of a lot of issues. They were supposed to be the people who promote business. Now they seem to be just a propaganda arm of the Republican Party, much like fake news on Fox. So the Democrats have a new jobs plan. What's wrong with the ones we had before? There's another new jobs bill coming out?
Well, no, it's the same jobs bill, but the plan is to actually try to get the jobs, to get it through. Basically, they like the jobs bill, but they know that they're not getting anything passed. So what the Senate Democrats are doing is they're going to try to attach legislation that provide businesses with incentives to hire unemployed and disabled veterans. They're going to attach that to a bill that's already been passed in the House, and the Republicans are begging the Senate to pass, which is controlled by Democrats.
Right.
And that bill repeals a rule requiring governments to withhold 3% of large contractor payments so firms can't cheat on their taxes, which is something that Republicans want. So they think it's going to be nearly impossible for Republicans to oppose their latest jobs bill, the Vow to Hire Heroes Act, just before Veterans Day.
Oh, yeah. You think they're going to be fazed by that? Come on. They're the kings of fake patriotism.
The Democrats are hoping that, you know, because this bill wouldn't only put veterans to work, it would be paid for by a fee structure for Veterans Affairs Department home loans. It's not going to be paid for by taxes. They really think they're onto something here.
Well, we shall see, because you got to give the Republicans credit. They've done a masterful job of standing in the way of any progress. They've done a nice job of filibustering and blocking and gridlock, all that, as you knew they would do. So good for them. Latest jobs reports numbers out. We gained some private sector jobs, lost a bunch of public sector jobs. Again, you know, this whole cut, gut, and punish, costing us jobs that could turn this economy around. But the jobs numbers out?
Yeah, jobs numbers up 104,000 in the private sector, down about 24,000 in the public sector, exactly as you've said. And this has been going on for about a year now in the public sector, losing jobs because state and local governments are trying to deal with deficits, and the way they're doing it is by laying off workers. And so what you see is a net gain of about 80,000 jobs, and that's not even enough to keep up with with population growth. We did see a downtick of the unemployment rate from 9.1 to 9%, so that was good.
Yeah, that's just because people fell off the unemployment rolls.
Well, no, actually, more people were reporting that they were finding work.
Oh, good. Well,
so that was positive.
Yeah, that is positive. But at the end of the day here, you know, I question how many of those public sector jobs that we destroyed, how many of those were picked up in the private sector, and what's it going to cost us down the road?
Well, this is it. It was not stellar news. It was really very mediocre news.
I mean, and I guess it's good news if you look at the political climate, which is doing nothing, nothing positive. In fact, I would argue that everything that's being done is a negative, and I would argue that what the Republicans are doing is creating an environment where businesses are going, well, we don't know what you crazy people are going to do. We're not doing anything either. Just my thought.
You could make that argument.
And I did. The weekend's coming up. I guess you're going to be partaking in one of the new releases this weekend. I guess, what's it called? Puss in Boots?
Puss in Boots is how you say it.
Okay, all right.
With Antonio Banderas.
Aha.
In 3D.
Now I know.
I'll give you a review on Monday.
I cannot wait. And what's the movie?
It's called Puss in Boots.
Yeah, I get that. What's the point?
It's about Puss and his sidekick, Kitty Softpaws, and they have an adventure.
There you go. I'm sure my children will love it as well. but we can't wait for Monday. Let's just bypass the weekend and get right to Monday so we can get your review.
Okay, then.
Thanks so much, Victoria.
All right. Bye-bye.
Have a great weekend. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. And now to find out what's going on across the street, what do you got for us tonight, Jay?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. In a recent meeting of the Elections Board, one of the county commissioners, Democrat, Mr. Rovigno, who isn't running, made some, I think, rather pointed comments about the attempts to redistrict the 15th senatorial district. And this is what he said. He said, if there's any good reason why someone can give me why someone from the Harrisburg area should represent the citizens of Western Cumberland County, he would like to hear it. He called the recent proposals on the 15th senatorial district the worst case of gerrymandering he has ever seen. Rovigno said the proposed resembles the political cartoon from 1812 that made the word gerrymandering famous, and that was run in the Patriot News earlier in the week. as bad a comment as that was, I think a more pointed comment came actually from a Republican, Barbara Cross, who had also attended the meeting. She said the redistricting doesn't pass the common sense test, regardless of who would hold the 15th Senate seat or where they would live. Cross said the residents of far western Cumberland County would potentially have to, and this is amazing, they would potentially have to go through two different counties to get to the office of Senator Pakola. Now, as bad as that was, I think the editorial board of the Harrisburg Patriot hit it right on. They said what the redistricting committee did in central Pennsylvania is not illegal, but it's blatantly wrong. The panel concocted a horseshoe district that many say was solely to remove Harrisburg from Republican Jeff Pakola's district. And he's going to, according to the redistricting plan, he's going to be responsible for Dauphin, Perry, Adam, York, and Cumberland. My question is, if it isn't illegal, why isn't it? Redistricting is supposed to be done, at least in theory, Rick, in a nonpartisan, non-political manner. This is certainly blatant, and it's done for one reason, and that is to save the political career of a Republican senator. And shame on them. Now, whether something will be done, whether they will take that to court, remains to be seen. I personally hope that they do. Article coming out of Harrisburg, and hopefully maybe this is the last article. It seems that Harrisburg has their last chance to come up with some reasonable compromises on the problem that they have. Among other steps, the plan would raise parking ticket fees. It would eliminate the city's park rangers, and it would implement a hiring freeze with restrictions on overtime for current city employees. The city's government can develop its own long-term recovery plan. I would say at this point, if they don't, and the state takes it over, I think there's going to be some real, real repercussions. I think the council, even though I tend to agree with them on some issues, I think at this point, Rick, they have no alternative but to come up with a reasonable plan of their own to save their city from a disastrous situation. Back to you.
All righty. Well, let's take a quick break. Back after this to wrap things up and head into the weekend.
The Rick Smith Show.
Workers in the late 1930s began exerting a recently guaranteed right to organize and join unions. Millions of workers flocked to join the labor organization of their choosing to collectively bargain for better wages, hours, and working conditions. Factory, mill, and mine owners, not eager to embrace the changes, fought vehemently to deny workers their rights. As company tactics grew more heavy-handed and brutal, the workers' organizing methods changed. Sit-down strikes became a way for workers to demand their rights and to force management to listen. With a wave of a handkerchief, the tip of a hat, workers would shut down their machines, lay down their hammer, and sit down. Workers at the Hershey Chocolate Factory in Hershey, Pennsylvania, seeking to reduce the 60-hour-long work week, decided to form a union. Initially, an agreement was reached, but as the economy took a downturn, the company willfully violated the agreement by laying off the most senior workers, those who just happened to be the most ardent union supporters. The workers voted to strike the very next day. At 11 a.m. on April 2nd, 1937, a red handkerchief was waved and the workers began their first sit-down strike in Pennsylvania's history. The company reacted by forming the Loyal Workers Club. These strikebreakers consisted of hired thugs from New York City and local farmers, dairy producers, and shopkeepers who were dependent on the factory. On April 6, Hershey organized a loyalty parade. After hours of rallying speeches, the lathered-up Loyal Workers Club mob found pipes and clubs that had been manufactured at the Hershey planing mill. The angry mob headed to the Hershey factory to throw their strikers out. Songs of solidarity sung by the striking workers could be heard from inside the factory as the angry mob burst into the plant. Blocking the only exit, the Loyal Workers Club, Loyal only to management and greed, it began pummeling the workers as they tried to escape. The assault left numerous workers bloody and beaten, many unconscious. Within days, Hershey reopened and recognized the renamed version of the Loyal Workers Club. In May of 1938, the National Labor Relations Board ruled Hershey had violated the law and the company union was dissolved. Soon, the workers joined the Bakery and Confectionery Workers Local 464, who have faithfully represented the workers ever since. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
Right, welcome back. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Any questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Next Tuesday, Election Day, going to be interesting to see what happens around the country. There's a couple of places where there's some interesting issues on the ballot, and I look at you look at Maine, for instance. There's a big ballot initiative going on up there, you know, having to do with voting rights. And this group, Yes on One campaign, evidently they've spent $250,000 trying to change the way the folks in Maine register to vote. They're one of the few states that have same day registration. In fact, they were the first state to have same-day registration. I think it's been somewhat 38 years. I think it was 1973 when Maine became the first state in the nation to pass Election Day registration. Personally, I have no idea why every state doesn't have same-day registration. You look at Iraq. What did they do in Iraq? They came out with a little stamp pad. Go, okay, put your finger on the pad. Oh, you can vote. Here, we gotta have voter ID cards, we need to have electric bills, we need to have signed affidavits, we need to have, you know, underwear sizes checked. What happened to the ink pad? And I remember the first election, everybody walking around with their ink finger? But here, I guess we're superior to that. I guess voting is more complex, here in the U.S. And I look at the money, $250,000 in Maine. That's not like, you know, New York or anywhere. $250,000 in Maine is an enormous sum. And right now, you know, people who want to keep same-day registration have a little bit of a lead. The polling right now is at about 48 to 44. I don't know why you'd want to give that up. That makes no sense to me whatsoever why you'd want to give it up. Unless you believe that we can hold those people down. That we don't want the kind of people who have to wait to the last minute to vote. No, no, no. It's just nuts. And you look at what's going on in Ohio. Tuesday, for labor, Tuesday is a huge day when you look at what's going on in Ohio. If they can push back on that issue too and repeal SB 5, that will be a huge step in the right direction. But at the end of the day, all of the money that's been spent, it's going to hurt in the long run. You know, the fact that the Koch brothers never seem to run out of money because they're oil and gas barons. We're basically funding our own demise. And, you know, they're behind a good portion of this. And you look at right now that one of these right-wing groups, Citizens United. Sound familiar? Yeah, it does sound familiar. They're spending $100,000 in 30-second ads in Ohio, targeting most of them to Cincinnati. And what's interesting about Cincinnati, one of the big right-wing talk show hosts down there, that Billy Cunningham has come out and said, you know, we need to repeal this because workers need to have a seat at the table. You got a radical right-wing conservative who has said that the workers need to have a right to be at the table. And yet you've got a right-wing government there who they think the only way that they can dictate, they can, well, dictator, The only way they can rule is by stealing away from the workers. Because, you know, we need that in our tool belt. We need the ability to steal in our tool belt. It's the only way we can run the state. And you look at Ohio, much like Michigan, much like Pennsylvania, much like a lot of the radical right-wing states. What'd they do? They cut spending on education. They went after workers' rights, stealing wages and benefits back. And you know what they did with them? They shifted them for handouts for corporations. Does that make a hell of a lot of sense to you? I mean, it doesn't make much sense to me. So, again, Tuesday, I think it'll be a huge day. We're going to be in Columbus covering the SB5 fight and see how that's going to come out. And we hope to bring you some interesting interviews with folks who will be there. So we hope you'll tune in. And again, if you miss any portion of our program, thericksmithshow.com is where you can go to check them out. I get these, and I would love to know if there are topics you'd like me to cover. Stosh called in not too long ago and said, hey, let's talk about Buy American. And we're gonna do some of that. Other people have called and said, hey, we'd like to talk about Marcellus Shale. Do some of that. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. But I'm on a bunch of these email lists for these companies that it's their job to, you know, go out and hawk guests and to go out and push, topics because for the most part the topics, pay them. You know, these people who are the CEO of this or that or the spokesman for this product or that problem, they want to go out and they want you to, you know, buy their stuff. And I got one today that just kind of made me laugh. Also kind of made me a little worried. A couple of the things on there, you know, the pitch was forget Twitter, forget Facebook, forget LinkedIn. They won't help you find a job or be more employable. That's according to Shakif Lokanwala. He's the CEO of New View Systems. The key is being a global employee. How can job seekers be more global? And what are the three key attributes to make someone a global employee? And there's part of me that wants to interview this guy to find out what are the three attributes to being a global employee. And I started thinking about it. And, you know, never mind moving from state to state. You better be willing to move from country to country. And, you know, just like the argument that they make about right-to-work states, you're going to move out of Pennsylvania down to South Carolina, you know, or down to Tennessee like the Carlisle Tire and Wheel people had to do, or the ones who were lucky enough to be able to move down. But the wages are crummy down there, and they always argue, well, the standard of living is a lot different down there. You know, minimum wage in the South is good living. You live high on the hog because it's a lot cheaper down there. And, you know, if you're a global employee, you know, those pennies a day you'll be making in places like China or India, I have you living like a king in no time. So there's part of me that says I need to get a Shafiq Lokandala. That's probably the reason I won't. Lokandwala. To come on and talk to us about being a global employee. I mean, we've got global citizens. The investor class considers themselves global citizens. They've got homes all over the world, bank accounts all over the world, especially in those places that let them shelter some of their assets. So, you know, why not? Why not go after that? You know, a couple of the other guests that, you know, that they wanted to talk about in virtual fertilization. If it's out of reach for you, like it is for so many women, we can tell you how it helps. Because one clinic is giving away a free in vitro fertilization this winter. Your listeners can submit their stories and they can win. And I'm going, do I really want to talk to somebody who's hawking, bringing more people into the world? We've got 7 billion people. And I was thinking back to this story in like Parade magazine. Where the woman had like 8 kids, had been in vitro fertilized, had 8 kids in one shot. And the woman said, well, God wouldn't give her more than she could handle. And my response was, God didn't want her to have any. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming.
Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio WIOO Carlisle.
The Rick Smith Show
on Country Gold Radio WIOO Carlisle and WEEO Shippensburg.
Dark in the midnight.